using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 21st of April, year of our Lord, 2021, day 403 of America Held Hostage. Well, of course, today we're going to take a look at the aftermath of the Chauvin verdict. AOC, Biden, Kamala are not happy. It's not enough. This is all about racism. Even the Secretary of State, Blinken, says climate change is racism. There's a bill to end religious exemption for vaccines working its way through in Connecticut. And more news. We'll be right back. Just to give you an idea of how out of whack the narrative has become with the Marxist in control. And let's understand, this is not cultural war. This is nothing other than flat-out Marxism. It's totalitarianism. It's to manipulate your mind to get you to accept ridiculous things. And let's start with something that is only tangentially racist. And that is a story from SovereignMan.com. How to choose a mascot that won't be controversial in 2021. What's the first thing that comes to mind, he says, when you think of an evergreen tree? Perhaps the smell of pine, or a wooded trail by a babbling brook, or maybe even Christmas. However, for one member of the Board of Education in Portland, Oregon, the first thing that comes to mind is racism, right? Because everything is about racism. They were unable to approve the evergreen tree as a mascot in Portland, Oregon. And it was because of racism. They'd already changed the name of the school from Woodrow Wilson High School. That was too racist, too American, I guess. Frankly, I'm not a fan of Woodrow Wilson myself. He was a globalist who lied us into World War I. Nevertheless, they renamed it the Ida B. Wells Barnett High School, after a black journalist from the early 1900s who wrote extensively about civil rights, racial violence, and women's suffrage. So far, so good. We're on track here. But then they had to update their mascot, because I guess if you're going to name it after a black female journalist 100 years ago, Trojan Warrior doesn't fit. So let's get a pine tree, because that's nice and peaceful, and it fits in with what you have everywhere in Portland, Oregon, or that area. As one person, the staff committee chose the evergreen tree. Teacher described it and said, "Evergreens are characterized by the life-giving force of their foliage, the strength of their massive trunk, the depth of their roots. In an individual tree, as well as in a forest of trees, they provide shelter and sustenance. Yes, I think I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree." And yet, one of the members of the Board of Education disagreed. She said, "The trees were used to hang black people during lynchings." So it's a symbol of racism. I don't think they used evergreen conifers. That would not work. Nevertheless, can't have it. What can we have? Well, nothing. We must surrender to the temper tantrums of the left. And this is the thing that bothers me so much about what I see happening in the aftermath of the Chauvin verdict. I didn't cover it deliberately, and I didn't get into all the details of the trial. And we'll talk about the aftermath of this, what people have said for and against the trial, what the penalty is likely to be, because they're going to go through an assessment stage before they do a sentencing stage, and then there will be an appeal, and we'll talk about the aspects of that as well. But from the very beginning, this has not been about really guilt or innocence. It's not been about the police using excessive force. This has always been simply about racism. And that's the wrong message. Because if you read the articles at Free Thought Project or many other places, you find that there are a lot of issues with police brutality that need to be adjusted. The way that we use the police, what we use the police for, the training that's involved, there's a lot of different issues. But they only want to make it about race because they don't want to solve any issue. They don't want people to get along. They don't want to make things better. They want to make things worse. They're pushing for a race war. And you saw after this verdict that the mob was not even appeased. And we have some footage of what happened. But let's go back to the mascots here. You know, you've got to be very careful when you do a mascot because you never know exactly what's going to happen with a mascot. And it can be very tricky. That can devour cheerleaders and other things. So he goes on to write, perhaps the board might suggest using a bald eagle. Yeah, because it's a national bird. You have a lot of them in Oregon as well. But the bald eagle is a predatory bird. And people might think of that and connect it to sexual assault. It also might body shame anybody who is actually bald. Or maybe you could have a wild stallion. You know, they're untamed. They're majestic. No, stallions are horses, and horses were ridden by 19th century cavalrymen in the U.S. who subjugated Native Americans. What about a cute little baby piglet? No, that could offend Muslims. Maybe a musical instrument, something like a drum. No, drums historically originated in Africa and East Asia. So that would be cultural misappropriation. Highly offensive. Also contains leather that would offend animal rights activists. Maybe a plant really is the right way to go. Not a tree. But, you know, nobody was lynched with flowers, so maybe get a flower, but make sure you stay away from white flowers. No Edelweiss, especially because that's attached to Nazis, right, somehow? Evil white people. Maybe a black-eyed Susan. No, you can't do a black-eyed Susan. That could promote violence against women. Pansies could be considered to be a homophobic slur. And definitely no roses, because it was Woodrow Wilson's wife who started the Rose Garden in the White House. Where does this all end? Well, this all ends just like the lockdown when we tell them, I'm not even going to debate this nonsense anymore with you. We're just going to live our life, and I don't really care what kind of temper tantrums you throw. You demand that I participate in your mental illness. You know, as you see what's happening in Portland, Oregon, and I love the area up there. We've taken a couple of vacations up to Portland, Oregon. Never did see too much of the Pacific West when we were living in the East Coast because it's such a trip, but really enjoyed it going up to Portland, Oregon, and went up there for some reports, sadly. But we did take some vacations up there, and I was really surprised that probably in those areas that are deeply under the heel of the Marxist maniacs, that was where I was the most recognized. Somebody called me out when I was walking across the parking lot of a grocery store. We stopped to get some stuff to eat, and I was absolutely amazed. It recognized me there, recognized me in hotels, recognized me on airplanes, because that small group that is there in Oregon is so beleaguered by the insanity that is happening there. And here's an example of it. They've got a group that is trying to secede from Portland and join Idaho. And they were actually allowed to make a presentation to the Idaho legislature. Now, it is a very long shot because, you know, if an area wants to leave one state and join another state, you have to have the approval of both state legislatures, as well as Congress, to change those boundaries. And they have a big boundary change for greater Idaho that they would like to see happen. And when you look at the map, it's pretty amazing. Because they're carving out the rural areas that don't want to be controlled by the urban areas, it's kind of like what you see when you look at the electoral map. You see the color that they've chosen, red, for Republicans, which I absolutely hate that. Red is the color of socialists, and they know that. That's why they did that. Nevertheless, you look at the map, and you see that with a few urban islands, most of the country typically votes Republican. It's the vast rural areas, but they are still ruled by the concentrated population in the cities. And so when they try to carve this out of Oregon, it takes a big hunk out of Oregon. As a matter of fact, going all the way over to the Pacific Coast, because you're talking about people who are not wanting to be a part or associated with Portland and these other places. So it's very much a long shot. The founder of Move Oregon's Border for a Greater Idaho, Mike McCarter, said in his presentation to the Idaho legislature, the boundary between Oregon and Idaho is outdated because it doesn't match the cultural boundary between urban communities who like Portland's leadership and rural communities that are traditional, family-oriented, self-reliant. He said there'd be benefits for Idahoans as well, including more state tax money, access to the international port of Coos Bay, new industries, and a chance to alleviate future overcrowding in Idaho, he said, because it'd be more rural areas. Of course, those are all things that are on the negative side for the legislature in Oregon. And as we've seen with the lockdown, people who have power over you do not give it up. So that's not going to happen, but it certainly does show what is what the concern is for many people. And this story out of Portugal is relevant to people everywhere during the lockdown, during all of these other issues, because this is now a struggle by homeschoolers in Portugal. The Portuguese government is coming after them in a very rough way. This has been done before in Germany, very adamantly opposed to homeschooling. Germany, the place that has embraced regimented, institutionalized child raising, more so than any other country. I mean, they gave us the concept of kindergarten. I can still remember that was kind of an optional thing when I was a kid, and it was talked about quite a bit. For the most part, it was private. I don't think that the government schools were even doing kindergarten at the time, and I can remember several times my mom being asked about kindergarten when I was that age, and how upset she got about that. Absolutely no way I'm doing that. She was not a big believer in schools either, but there wasn't a homeschooling choice at that point in time, unless you wanted to do something very radical and fight and continually move to stay one step ahead of the truancy officers, which the guy who was a speechwriter for Barry Goldwater. His mother did that back in the 1930s and made him the guy that he was. Anyway, going back to the lesson that we see happening in Portugal, they're teaming up and they're coming after the few homeschoolers. And I've got to say that I've seen this happen before in North Carolina and many other states. And it was very encouraging to see that even though there was a small minority of people, and even though they were allied against one of the biggest power blocks in government, and that is the educational establishment, the teachers' unions and the rest of them, that they were able to prevail by being very, very active in terms of complaining about the stated legislation, in terms of showing up, which is now, they're shutting that down so that you can't show up and actually do in-person lobbying of these politicians. They love that because they don't like to have people show up. But if you are a squeaky wheel, if you get in their face, if you're constantly writing letters, it does change things. We can see that's one of the reasons why you have these people who are demanding that we rename everything, that we take all the statues down, that we can't even have an evergreen tree as a mascot. That's one of the reasons why they're succeeding, is because they're a tireless, vocal minority. But you can be that. And there's actually more of us to do that type of thing. Now, I don't know how many homeschoolers are in Portugal, but you can have a very tiny but vocal and active minority that can make things change. And so in spite of the lockdown that is going on in Portugal, they're using that to further restrictions on homeschooling. That's the amazing thing to me. That in this environment where everybody is doing school at home, they're coming after the homeschoolers in Portugal. And in this environment where they are demanding that your children be isolated and not have any social contact whatsoever, even at the school institution, keep those kids separated, keep them behind plexiglass, keep them masked all day. That kind of anti-social distancing. Even in that environment, these people are coming after the homeschoolers to impose new restrictions on it. And they're shutting the homeschoolers out of the debate. And so this is a story that came out of LifeSite News. If you want to see how you can try to help people in other countries, because as they point out, this is an international situation. Pretty much everything now is global. You see the same tactics being applied in every nation, not just for the lockdown, but for all of these different aspects. And so they even have a letter in Portuguese at LifeSite News. And this is a help defend freedom for Portuguese homeschoolers. So they have a letter in Portuguese that you can send. They talk about how you can translate. If you want to say something different yourself, you can translate it using Google Translate, a lot of other issues like that. So take a look at that. But understand the lesson that we've learned as homeschoolers, a very, very small minority at the beginning, because it was much smaller than it is now, how they fought for their liberty. And when I first heard of homeschooling back in the late 1980s, I was hearing about it as CPS officers taking children, police officers shooting homeschoolers in the back, that type of thing, because they were angry that their children were being taken away. They physically resisted and they were murdered, some of them. The Biden administration has now banned the term illegal alien. Even though, let's unpack this, alien means a non-citizen or a migrant. Well, okay, actually it means a non-citizen, doesn't mean a migrant. And then when you talk about illegal, yes, it is against the law, because, you know, you can have legal aliens as well. You can have people who are coming on a work visa or just temporarily traveling for commerce or whatever, and they're not illegal. You can have legal immigrants. You can have legal migrants as well as illegal migrants. But no, let's not talk about that. Let's call them, they said, undocumented non-citizens. Okay. as Tom Cotton said, we use the term illegal alien because they're here illegally. And you know, when we had the debates between the Democrats, I thought it was interesting that all the different Democrat candidates were adamant that we have to decriminalize crossing the border. It's like, okay, you just admitted that what is happening is illegal if you have to decriminalize it, right? But no, we're going to play that game. And you have George W. Bush. Do you miss him yet? I don't. He's been gone a long time. He's been gone since 2008, and I really do not miss him. I wish he would go away and keep making paintings of his feet in the bathtub. But he came out and he said the GOP today is isolationist. Isolationist. Isn't that interesting? Of course, he's not saying that in the sense that, you know, all these globalists who were calling us isolationists, they were not, these are the people who are adamant that we have to lock every country down. Every country's got to be, we've got to stop all international travel, and we should stop travel inside of our countries as well. As a matter of fact, we should stop traveling to anything other than big box retailers and the online technocrats. Travel nowhere, do nothing other than that. So you want to talk about isolationism, Bush? And nativist, he said, nativist. Well, we know who he identifies with, don't we? A globalist talking about isolationism. How's that for irony? The Arizona governor, Doug Ducey, has declared a state of emergency at the border. Will deploy 250 National Guard troops. He said that the National Guard, or rather the Border Patrol agents, So they made 168,000 arrests at the border in March compared to 71,000 in December. So in just 3 months, it's gone up by 2.5 times, 250% increase in terms of people coming across because it's been incentivized. That's the real issue. We want to be able to have commerce with people, and yet to give them, people who do not want to be citizens. And, you know, that's the interesting thing when you go back and you look at amnesty that Ronald Reagan did. But, all right, you know, we've got millions of people who are here, who came here illegally, and we're going to give them the opportunity to become citizens. And then we're going, and the other side of this is, then we're going to control the border. Well, they never did that other side. And even the people who were given the ability to become citizens, only a small minority of them actually bothered to apply. They just don't care. They don't want to be citizens. They don't want to be a part of our culture. Why should they be allowed to vote? That's one of the most dangerous things anybody could do, is to vote. Anyway, the governor of Arizona said the state would deploy 250 National Guards to help local law enforcement who are overwhelmed. He said citizens and our border communities are concerned for their safety. They're left to pick up the pieces of broken federal policies. And that's exactly true. Because the problem is that if you leave the border completely open, it's not just peaceful people who are going to be coming in. We can see what the war on drugs has created in Mexico. The violence between drug gangs is far more brutal than anything that we ever saw with Al Capone during that prohibition. And it's risen to the point where they're going after journalists, but especially politicians and judges and everyone. I mean, they've become the government. It is a failed narco-terror state in many respects and in many areas. Looking at Tesla, because this is something that I've been meaning to cover the last couple of days, haven't had the opportunity to, but it was in Houston, area outside of Houston, where we had a couple of people die in a Tesla that they were testing autopilot. I had a friend who here at where I used to work, who got a Tesla and wanted me, since I was skeptical of autopilot, and since I was opposing battery-operated electric cars, not because I care about what people drive. I don't care. I mean, you can buy electric car, you can buy a diesel, you can buy gasoline. I'm not the one telling people what they need to drive. It's the government telling people and incentivizing people to do certain things. That immediately gets my attention, and I start to look for what the agenda is. And I believe from the very beginning that this was not about saving the environment. They were pushing people to electric cars and not to hydrogen electric cars or any other technology for electric cars. You know, you can make a diesel zero emissions, and they have done that. If money is no object. And so you could get very, very, very clean diesel engines that were made by Mercedes, some kind of blue tech, they called it or something, where they continually scrub the emissions. If money is no object, you don't necessarily have to go to electric. But fine, if you want to get an electric car, I don't have a problem with that. You know, it has some unique features to it. But the reason that they're going to battery electric cars and the reason they're banning other cars, de facto and explicitly in other countries, is because they want to be able to tax you by the mile. They need to have a justification to tax you by the mile. Why is that important? That is important because once they say we have to tax you by the mile, now they have to give you the black box or the controls to monitor everything that you do and every aspect of the way that you drive. And then, as we've had these discussions for many years with Eric Peters, that data will be used by the insurance companies to make driving a car absolutely unaffordable. There will be no end to the backseat nanny taxation that the insurance companies put on you with that. So that is really where they're headed, and that's why they're focused on one thing and one thing only, battery-operated electric cars. Because any other way of doing this, diesel fuel, gasoline, hydrogen, they could tax the car at the point where it's filled up, but not with the battery-operated car. So that's why they're focused on that. It's like they're doing with the vaccines. They have an agenda where they want to create a social credit score, geospatial tracking, monitoring everything that you do, monitoring you, just like they want to monitor your travel with these black boxes and the battery-operated cars. So that is their agenda. And you move one level back, and you get the vaccines. And then you move one level back, and you get the pandemic. And, of course, the pandemic, the only thing we can do about the pandemic is to have a vaccine. You can't have any treatment because the treatment doesn't get them to where they want to go on their agenda. And, again, the end point is control and tracking, the same as it is with the battery-operated cars. Now, a big part of this and a big selling feature of this was autopilot. And this is not the first time this has happened. And as many people are pointing out, including now their competitors and other car companies like Ford that are offering battery electric cars, they're pointing out that this is essentially a beta test on public highways. That's right. Well, why would we be concerned about that? Because, you know, when you look at what's happening with the vaccines, with Operation Warp Speed, that's a beta test. You know, that's a phase three test. Instead of doing the regular phase three test, which takes 2 years, and that's not enough, said many scientists at the WHO before this all began, they're going to do a two-month test, said Trump. And he said, and if you don't approve this to the FDA, you're fired. Approve it today or you're fired. Remember that? As we got closer and closer to the election, Trump got more and more desperate to get those vaccines out there. So this is not unprecedented that if they've got an agenda to track and to control you, that they are going to heavily subsidize it, which is what's happening with the electric cars. They are going to sweep aside all concern about safety. Even these people who were saying, we have to put all kinds of things in the cars. You know, we've got seatbelt laws, we've got airbags, we've got all these things. And yet, we don't care. We're going to let them do autopilot beta testing on the roads, on the roads. So, yeah, I passed on that offer to do a report. I decided that I would decline that because what these guys did, nobody was in the driver's seat. You had one person in the back seat, one person in the passenger seat. And so it took 23 gallons of water, 23,000 gallons of water, to extinguish the flames because the battery kept reigniting once it caught fire. It tried to negotiate a turn in a cul-de-sac, was unable to do it, struck a tree, burst into flames, and I'll just show you the local report. It is absolutely amazing what this car looked like after what was nothing was left after the fire after fire after fire. Here's the pictures.
This morning, conflicting information as investigators dig into the cause of a deadly Tesla crash in Texas that claimed the lives of two people.
The position of the bodies, the trajectory of the impact, they are 100% certain that no one was in the driver's seat driving that vehicle at the time of impact. They're positive.
But Tesla's founder and CEO Elon Musk pushing back overnight, tweeting in part, data logs recovered so far show autopilot was not enabled, adding standard autopilot would require lane lines to turn on, which this street did not have. So far, neither local nor federal agencies have confirmed Musk's claim about the logs. The National Transportation Safety Board has now joined the probe, noting its investigation will focus on the vehicle's operation and the post-crash fire.
Our office has never experienced a crash scene like this. This went on for close to 4 hours.
To douse the now mangled Tesla Model S, fire crews unloaded some 30,000 gallons of water.
From what we hear, why the fire looked as bad as it was those lithium batteries kept reigniting.
Tesla has faced questions for years about the safety of its autopilot technology and the potential danger of lithium batteries. The federal government is currently overseeing around 24 active investigations of Tesla crashes from a driver falling asleep at the wheel near Boston.
I did a double take. This guy was just head between his legs, completely asleep.
To a devastating fatal crash in Mountain View, California in 2018, The NTSB found the driver in that case was likely distracted by playing a game on his smartphone. Tesla did not immediately respond to our request for comment about the latest accident, but does state on its website, while using autopilot, it is your responsibility to stay alert, keep your hands on the steering wheel at all times, and maintain control of your car.
So, Sam, back to that post-crash fire. I mean, do we know if this was an isolated incident or have authorities seen similar fires with these kinds of cars?
Well, I can answer that for you. We've seen a lot of these types of things. And you notice that Elon Musk doubled down on this. He said, what we know so far, the data that we have so far, well, what does that mean? And now the law enforcement officers there in Houston are saying, well, we want to have that data. But it's very ambiguous. He said that that autopilot requires lane lines, and that's one of the problems that they've had with a couple of fatal head-on crashes with barriers because of the lane markings confusing it as you had an exit lane on the interstate. But again, they were saying 4 hours, and they said 30,000 gallons. This article said 23,000 gallons of water. I guess at some point it doesn't really matter. So Elon Musk on Monday night was saying, again, so far, autopilot, what we've recovered so far shows that autopilot was not enabled in the car. So how would it drive at all? It doesn't make any sense. Sarah Hedge pointed out, well, there's three things here. Number one, the fact that nobody was in the driver's seat of the car makes autopilot the Occam's razor explanation for the wreck. Number two, it comes off as a preemptive PR effort to potentially mitigate and or influence the outcome of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's investigation. And if it turns out the autopilot was, in fact, off, the circumstances behind the wreck become even more baffling. But if it turns out that if one of the regulators finds that autopilot or was on during or seconds before the wreck, Musk is going to need a lot more PR spin on this. And again, they're going to subpoena the records. They said, we have witness statements from people that said they left, the two people who died, they left to test drive the vehicle without a driver and to show how it can drive itself. Again, doing a beta test on the highway. So anyway, we will see what happens with that. But here's why this is important. Because it is a pattern of behavior that we have seen by the elites, and it ties to exactly what we've been seeing for the last year against all of us. If these people want to do something, they lavish money on these billionaires, make them multi-billionaires, and it is the billionaires who roll out their agenda, whether that is censorship or whether it is lockdown and tracking you with a vaccine passport or whether it is taking your transportation and making sure that you don't go anywhere or do anything in a private car because they're going to make it prohibitively expensive. Once you get those black boxes, it's going to be the other corporations, the insurance companies, who will then be financially incentivized to make it impossible to afford to have a private vehicle. They want you under their thumb. They want you on their public transportation. That's where this is all going. Every bit of this is part of the UN 2030 agenda, the Davos Great Reset, where you will own nothing, you will go nowhere, and they will control and know everything about you. And when we talk about Ford, we had, as I said, last week, Ford CEO Jim Farley railed against Tesla for experimenting with driverless tech and using customers as guinea pigs on public roads. Why is that any different from what we're doing with a massive subsidy of Operation Warp Speed to these pharmaceutical companies? They've never had this much money before. And, you know, the subsidies that were poured into the vaccines are orders of magnitude, really, more than we've seen so far poured into the electric vehicles. But they're catching up very fast. And they will exceed that once the federal government starts to roll out a new infrastructure, again, for battery-operated electric vehicles, not for hydrogen electric vehicles or anything else. And so they will heavily subsidize the corporations. The corporations will roll this out and make lots and lots of money. And both the government and the corporations are always operating together, hand in glove, to shut down your free speech, your mobility, your ownership, everything. The fact that Tesla continues to beta test its autopilot and its full self-driving features on public streets is mind-blowing, considering the deaths continue to pile up, says Azir Hedge. Well, the deaths are continuing to pile up with the vaccines as well. And there's really not any investigation by our so-called watchdogs in the federal government. And, of course, Ford is not without their problems either. They have now a software glitch that transforms some of the new Mustang Mach-Es, their new, it's an electric SUV that they label a Mustang. My first car was a 68 Mustang, you know, like the one that Steve McQueen drove in Bullet. Not that big an engine, but still, it just cracks me up to think of a Mustang as an electric SUV. I can't, that's a, just a... Anyway, it turns them into electric bricks if you lose the charging on it. And the amazing thing is that it's the, if the 12-volt battery, which is a completely different electrical system than the massive batteries that are going to motivate the thing, if that 12-volt battery goes out, then it turns it into a brick. And the question is, I know they're on a, you know, the batteries that operate the motors are very high voltage, but you know, we have these things called transformers. And I know it's DC, but you could actually work it out. You really could. I just don't understand any of this. It makes no sense whatsoever. But then there's the 5G satellite internet project that is much bigger than all of this. But again, it's another part of the technocratic agenda. And remember, Elon Musk's father, grandfather, Joshua Haldane, was essentially run out of Canada. They put him on trial because they said he tried to overthrow the Canadian government and install a technocracy. Well, that's being done today. That was done in 2020. But, you know, 100 years ago, back in the 1930s, they ran him out. They put him on trial. He beat the rap, and then he beat it out of town, went to South Africa. That's why they're coming back from South Africa. But they were always a part of the technocracy. And, you know, I talked yesterday about Planned Parenthood, about Margaret Sanger, how Planned Parenthood has finally said, well, we need to distance ourselves from Margaret Sanger. but they're not distancing themselves from their mission. And, of course, Marie Stopes was the same thing. But these these technocrats and these eugenicists were all on the same page. I mean, this is the same group of people. They had exactly the same kind of globalist outlook, the same kind of elitism, you know, that you see from George W. Bush. Oh, yeah, we got to shut down these people who are nativists. And we need to, we're smarter than anybody, and we're going to control the population of the people that we think are going to be a potential danger to us. That was the agenda for both Marie Stopes and the UK and for Margaret Sanger and for the Bushes. Anyway, the patriarch of the Bush clan, Prescott Bush, right there with Margaret Sanger. So yeah, these people are globalists, they're elitists, they're technocrats. Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a book in the 1970s about the coming technocracy. He called it Between Two Ages, and he bragged about how when the technocracy came in, they would be able to track and know everything that you're doing instantaneously, have a dossier on everybody, biometric surveillance, and he was talking about this 50 years ago. 50 years ago. But, you know, these people have been, this is a multi-generational thing, whether you're talking about the Bush family, the Musk's family. And so the way this is looking now, the infrastructure of the smart cities and of the Great Reset, of course, is 5G. And so they're rolling that out heavily in the cities, but they're not content to leave those of us who choose not to live in the cities alone. They're going to set up a total blanket of radiation from these satellites. Another mass experiment. And this is a mass experiment on humans, just like the vaccines, 5G is. They don't know, they don't care what the effects are on us. As a matter of fact, if it kills a lot of people, that's even better because they are eugenicists and not just the technocratic elite. And again, that's the agenda of both of them, to reduce the population, that kind of population control, and to control our movements and to control our economic mobility as well. And so the Wall Street Journal spent a little bit of time with some beta testers in a remote area of Washington State to see if Elon Musk's SpaceX Starlink satellite internet service is truly the solution to global broadband gap. Because we have to worry about that. You know, just like Bill Gates says, the big problem with people in developing countries is that they don't have enough vaccines and they don't have IDs. And we need to get IDs for everybody. Yeah, I've heard that complaint all the time, you know, from people in the third world. It's like, you know, where are my IDs? They don't want ID. None of us want to be ID'd, quite frankly. Whether you're in a developing country or a developed country, none of us want your passports and your IDs and your biometric tracking and your databases that know everything about us. Nobody wants that. You want that. And the press wants that. And the governments want that. Elon Musk's internet satellite venture has spawned an unlikely alliance of competitors, regulators, and experts who say the billionaire is building a near monopoly threatening space safety and the environment, says the Wall Street Journal. SpaceX is authorized to send 12,000 satellites into orbit in order to beam super-fast internet to every corner of the Earth, and it sought permission for another 30,000. And so now you've got rival companies like Viasat, OneWeb Global, Hughes Network, Boeing, are all challenging Starlink's space race in front of regulators in both the U.S. and Europe, and some complain that Musk's satellites are blocking their own devices' signals and have physically endangered their fleets. Their big complaint, listen to this. Does this not sound like Operation Warp Speed? They're emphasizing speed over quality. They're filling the Earth's already crowded orbit with satellites that may need fixing after they launch. Well, the problem is that there's no way to fix the damage that's done to your body by these vaccines. You may be able to fix these satellites that are rushed up in a hurry, but you're not going to fix the damage that's done by these Operation Warp Speed vaccines that's rushed out there. But they really don't care because, again, it is about population control, control of your movements, and controlling the number of people who are out there. And all of this, you'll also notice another common thread, is that they all push artificial intelligence. They push robotics. They also push a nanotech because, you know, that's what's in the vaccines, nanotech. You have an AI ethicist, Kate Darling. Isn't that nice? She says robots can be our partners, and they show her holding a little toy robot dog. No, actually, the real thing is much better, trust me. She said in her new book, The New Breed, that we would be better prepared for the future if we started thinking about robots and AI like animals. She said we think of them too much like humans. But it's better to use an animal analogy because it opens our mind to other possibilities that robots can be our partners. So the companies are trying to develop robots that take humans out of the equation. You have driverless robot cars, package delivery by drone. That's what you see, the very first thing that you see in the 2015 Davos Great Reset video. Package delivery by drone. She says, well, there is a threat to people's job, but that threat is not the robots. It's the company decision, driven by a broader economic and political system of corporate capitalism. Now, this is about fascism. Fascism is not the same as capitalism. I like to think of capitalism as, I don't even like to use the word because it's so overloaded with people's perceptions. I like to talk about the free market. And what we see happening now in America, and for a long time, has not been a free market. It has been crony capitalism. It has been fascism. And in this fascism, the people like Bloomberg openly admitted that they were working to actively remove your jobs. By 2030, they would have, as they said in one study in South Korea, 70% of doctors and lawyers would have their jobs removed by artificial intelligence. So it's not just the people who are driving trucks or the people who are doing manual labor or at the bottom of entry-level positions. It's everywhere, and it's in every industry across the board. And yet, the COVID fake pandemic has allowed them to say, it's not me. I'm not doing this to you. The virus did this to you. We have to do this. And you don't want humans cooking and delivering your food in the restaurants. You want to have something that is completely not touched by human hands. And so they said, who should be responsible when a robot causes harm? You know, when Elon Musk's car doesn't perform in its beta test on highways. Well, shouldn't we hold the robot manufacturers responsible for harm? They ask her, and she says, well, my concern is that the companies are being left off the hook. You have a cyclist killed by a self-driving Uber car in 2018, right? Again, go right back. That's where we're seeing robotics right now, and we're seeing the distancing of all this. She said, when that happened, remember that? Remember that video? The woman was walking across the road at night in the dark, and the camera that was showing the human behind the wheel, and of course, this is what he said, well, we have a human backup there. Well, the human gets tired. I mean, this thing is basically doing what it needs to do for the most part. And they get tired of it. They start to trust it. You know, like you're trusting the vaccines. Because, you know, look at how many different turns the computer has been able to navigate, and there wasn't any problem with it. So I guess I don't really need to care about this. I can just ignore any continuing risk. And of course, if something does come up, it's going to come up very quickly in an emergency situation. You need to react to it. Well, she couldn't see because of the headlights. She couldn't see that woman until she got right in front of the car and it was too late. But she wasn't even looking. She was looking down. They held her responsible, not the manufacturer, says the person talking about the ethics here. They said, shouldn't we hold the manufacturers responsible? She says, well, the problem is the companies are being left off the hook. It was that person who was left on the hook, who was behind the car, the human. And it wasn't humanly possible to see that coming. The woman was jaywalking at night. However, the car had LIDAR. It had radar. It didn't need to be able to see that. And it should have stopped. And the reason it didn't stop was because they had it hooked up typically to the, yeah, there you go, there's Ed 209? Yeah, Ed 209. Put down the gun. No, you still didn't. But it should have hit the emergency brakes, but they said that it was unreliable and it was applying the emergency brakes in unusual circumstances, so they disconnected the emergency brakes. But of course, they're not held responsible. It's like when we had two kids die, one right after the other, a couple of toddlers in Samoa. The manufacturers were not held responsible for the vaccines. The hospital was not held responsible. They came after the nurses who gave them the shots. And that's what you're going to see. It's always going to be the little guy down at the bottom. Finally, we'll talk about the a good example of technology out of control and a government out of control. All of those come together with the F-35 program. Too expensive to use, too expensive to lose. The F-35, says Julian McFarland, the greatest boondoggle in American history. Over its lifespan, it'll cost the American taxpayers $1.7 trillion. An F-35B costs $138 million, and it costs over $36,000 an hour to operate. Maneuvers are sluggish. It can't fire its new lightweight Gatling gun without destroying the housing and the plane. It suffers from 13 Class 1 defects that endanger both the aircraft and its crew. And it has 871 flaws that must be corrected before it can be fully operational. And that's going to take at least another 5 years. Still, the U.S. has managed to force this aerial junk on a lot of its allies, most recently the UAE. The Israelis have two squadrons of F-35s, and they mostly use them for PR. They asked for more F-22s. Which, again, they can only afford to buy if we give them money. You see how similar everything that the government does is? You know, we'll give you cash so that you can buy planes to a foreign country like Israel. We'll give you cash so that you can buy planes from our American manufacturers. Always crony capitalism. Always the corruption. And that has always characterized the military-industrial complex. But we're seeing that everywhere. We're seeing it big pharmaceutical companies. Pfizer, that had $9 billion in sales for all of the drugs that it manufactured, a century-old pharmaceutical company, had total sales of $9 billion. It will make $30 billion on the vaccine alone this year. Alone. Last year, there were reports that Syrians had downed an F-35 over Syria with a Soviet-era S-2000, very old. Israelis claimed that a bird did it. It's a coincidence theory, right? It's the same thing we see when people are dying from the vaccines. The patterns of behavior of these people is so repetitive in every one of these areas, and their agenda is always the same. The Americans tried out the F-35 in Afghanistan since locals throwing rocks were not much of a threat. that's where we are. So the difference is that there really isn't any difference as we look at these different problems that we have. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Chauvin verdict and the aftermath of what is happening and where we go, and really some of the real police problems that we have. Then we're going to get into America Held Hostage. We've got a great video of another hero, another anti-lockdown hero, like Arthur Pawlowski on Easter, saying to the police, get out. I'm not interested in what you have to say. Get out. We had a pub owner do this in the UK to a Labour MP. And it is a wonderful sight to behold. And I'll just say this before I leave the technological boondoggles that are there. That should actually give you hope. I like to try to give people hope because so much of the news is negative. It is what it is. And if it's negative and I have to tell you the negative news, I do that. But let me tell you, this is a bit hopeful. When we look at things like the F-35, it's hopeful because no matter how much money these people spend, no matter how much they try to weaponize something, and I believe that Fauci attempted to weaponize a bioweapon, you know, out of Wuhan and other places, the gain of function, the coronavirus. But it's probably like this F-35 program. And understand that no matter how much money and how much technical sophistication these people have, they frequently can't pull it off. And there's an opportunity for us there. And this just from a human perspective. Their agenda is so evil, and we understand that what is happening here. I have an update as well as to what's going on with the trans wars, the trans pedophile wars against our children. When we understand the evil that is in our country, you understand that's why this is happening. And we don't even have to place our faith in their incompetence and their complexity that destroys what they try to do. We need to place our faith in God because that's why this stuff is happening to us. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, I want to talk about the aftermath of the Chauvin trial, the verdict that came out late yesterday afternoon. But before I get into it, let's talk a little bit about the cases that they're not paying attention to. Did you realize that in 2020, there were 1,127 deaths carried out at the hands of U.S. cops, and only 16 officers were charged. But that's not being looked at. I mean, there are things that need to be changed in policing, how we use our police, how they are trained, and so forth. And that really should be the discussion of what happened with the situation with George Floyd, Derek Chauvin. But no, they turned it into racism. Why? Because they don't want to fix the problem. And I've talked about this many, many times. Every time there is a police death that is white on black, you know, white officers on black individuals, they turn that into an international event. But when it is any other kind of combination, they ignore it because they're simply trying to create a race war. So let's talk about the reality of what's going on here. Most police killings in 2020 involved calls that had no crime, or it was over nonviolent offenses. And this is from Free Thought Project. They said the majority of police killings involve calls in which there's no crime, and if there is a crime, it is a nonviolent crime. Most killings began, says the report, with police responding to suspected nonviolent offenses or cases where no crime was reported. Of the 1,127 people killed by police in 2020, only 277 of them were suspected of a violent offense. So, 1,127 people killed by the police, only 277 of them involved a violent offense. 658 were suspected of a nonviolent offense or no crime at all. Another 121 were killed over traffic violations. So that's about 780 that you have out of the 1,127. Nonviolent offenses or no crime at all or traffic violation. About 780 out of 1,100. They said, for starters, one of the biggest problems, common problems, is police incompetence in dealing with mental health issues. And these are typically the most egregious ones that you see. People who are homeless or wandering around, perhaps, outside of their home. Maybe they're being taken care of by relatives. They're confused. They don't understand what's going on. And after a while, the police get violent. In 2015 alone, police in America killed over 1,400 people during mental health crises. Even cops who voluntarily attend crisis intervention training have shown that they're quick to use the trigger when dealing with a mentally ill. People are killed even when they aren't in a crisis or simply act differently. Like Elijah McClain, who was on his way home from buying groceries and was murdered by police because he was an introvert and wore a ski mask. A case that happened before the masks were mandated. And this is another thing that should concern us, as we see police in other countries, and in this country as well, start to get increasingly violent over issues about not wearing your mask or not wearing it properly, or violating curfew, or violating the number of people who are together. We've added a whole lot of nonviolent crimes during this lockdown. And you better believe that you're going to have some issues like this. And I think another thing that's not talked about in this report is the fact that a lot of people who don't see themselves as doing anything wrong start to buck up, talk back, and even push back when they get shoved by the police. And so a lot of the problem is too many laws and the wrong kinds of laws. But going back to the people who have mental health issues. In June of 2020, Denver began the Support Team Assistance Response Program. They call it STAR, which sends mental health professionals and a paramedic to some of the 9/11 calls instead of sending the cops. If it's a mental health crisis, they send people who specialize in mental health. According to the latest data, STAR has responded to more than 2,500 calls in Denver. 9/11 calls, which police would have normally been sent out to. They're armed only with experience and some compassion and understanding of what the situation is. They have never once called police to back them up. Nobody was ever arrested. Nobody was ever killed. another type of encounter, which typically turns deadly all too often, is the traffic stop. While most everyone in America commits these same traffic infractions designed for revenue collection instead of safety, most of the people targeted by police for these crimes are the poor and minorities. And oftentimes, officers treat these stops as gateways to fish for drug activity or other victimless crime. While ending the drug war would have much more profound effect, some municipalities have kicked around the idea of removing traffic stops from the mission of police officers. And I'll just throw this in as an aside. There's a case of civil asset forfeiture, part of one of the horrific abuses that has come along with the war on drugs. This particular case was a Hispanic guy that was at the border. He had a new a Ford pickup truck, and he stopped and he was taking pictures. And the police came over and started searching for something. The only thing they found were a couple of rounds of ammunition in the truck. And they said, well, we think that you are involved in trafficking or something. He had absolutely no involvement in any of that, as later investigations proved. But they confiscated his truck because they found a couple of loose rounds of ammunition in the back of the passenger compartment, and no gun, which is kind of what happens to you in Washington, D.C. You know, you can be arrested on firearms violation charges if you got a shotgun shell or even an expired. We had somebody that was arrested there for an expired classic shotgun shell that wasn't even operable if he'd had the gun. And that's what they did to this guy. And even though he sued them, he had to sue them to prove his innocence. And he was still fighting for that and all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court just shut it down. Think about that. They could get any one of us. A means of bolstering the prison industrial complex by extracting revenue from those who can pay and incarcerating others who cannot. And one of the reasons that they focus on the poor and the minority people is because, as I point out, in Chicago, it costs $900 to begin the lawsuit to get your car back. If they can go through your car and say they find something that is part of a marijuana joint or a bullet or something like that, just take the car. And most of the cars that are confiscated are about $1,000 in value. They can keep those and fund their police department. If you want to fight them, you've got to start by putting up $900. And then the battle begins. Then you have to sue them, and you have to prove you're innocent. Isn't that interesting? To prove a negative, prove I didn't do it. For those who are too poor to pay their tickets, routine traffic stops end up as repeated imprisonment due to mounting fines. Cities across the country are running a de facto debtor's prison this way. So that's the environment of where we are. There's a lot of different things that are causing police violence. The wrong kinds of laws, prohibition, traffic stops, the civil asset forfeiture issue, inadequate training, the wrong kind of orientation, using the police to do the wrong kind of job. I mean, if you got somebody who's having a mental health issue, why send the police there, right? Again, it'd be better to send somebody who is trained for that type of thing, who is a medical professional, who deals with those types of people on a regular basis. So we can make those kinds of changes. But no, this is not what this Floyd Chauvin trial was about. It was about racism. Just to make it clear, Biden and Harris demanded, quote, racial justice. America has a long history of systemic racism, said Harris. We're holding our nation back from realizing our full potential. Systemic racism is a stain on our nation's soul. The knee on the neck was the nation's, the knee on the neck of the nation's black Americans, because only black Americans are being killed by the police, right? No. If you wanted to solve the problem, you would take a minority and you would try to make common cause with a majority, wouldn't you? No, they want a race war. That's all they want. And, you know, talk about a knee on the neck. I've been talking about a knee on the neck of all Americans with this lockdown, a knee on the neck of the middle class that's being murdered this last year by Republicans as well as by Democrats under martial law. You want to talk about police brutality? Talk about martial law that we've been under for a year, for 403 days. They don't want to talk about that. They would rather have you fighting each other over skin color, over systemic racism, because they don't want you fighting them. So you had other people in the Biden administration saying, we've spent our entire lives fighting for racial equity. Everything is about race with this narrative. There are those who will seek to exploit the raw emotions of the moment, said Biden. This is Biden talking. Talk about hypocrisy. There are those who will seek to exploit the raw emotions of the moment. Agitators, extremists, who have no interest in social justice, who seek to carry out violence, destroy property, fan the flames of hate and division, who will do everything in power to stop this nation's march towards racial justice. And we can't let them succeed. There can never be any safe harbor for hate in America. Except that is exactly what they're doing. Listen to AOC. Even after they get the guilty verdict, AOC says, this is not justice. This is not resolution. Systemic institutional racism is what we're fighting here. We will never stop until we have everything under our thumb. They're using this. It's despicable how they're using this. If you wanted to make his life meaningful, you know, Nancy Pelosi thanked him for sacrificing. Thank you for sacrificing your life for justice. He didn't do that. He didn't do that. He did not go out there to sacrifice his life for justice. People who sacrifice their life for justice are the people who oppose tyranny, foreign and domestic. He was just trying to survive. And if you wanted to do something about this, you would actually make some systemic changes in government, and government policies, and government laws, and government armed workers, but you're not doing any of that. No, you want us to fight each other, not you. This is not about cameras, she said, and restraining and chokeholds, AOC. This is about changing how we structure our society, right? And valuing black life. No, that's not about that. If it was about valuing black life, AOC, you'd be shutting down the black genocide of Planned Parenthood. 80% of them still in the black communities. You're not concerned about black lives. She said, I don't feel resolved today. No, she doesn't. Occasional Cortex said that framed this as America as a society pathologic by systemic racism. She said, we are willing to accept violence against some communities in our country. And so we have to do something about that. Well, again, we can't stop here. We've got to continue going, said both Biden and Harris. Harris, as reported by AP, the first black woman, no, she's the first half-black woman to serve as vice president, said racism was keeping the country from fulfilling its founding promise of liberty and justice for all. I think the biggest threat to what has happened to us in the last year has not been the actions of one police officer. I think the biggest threat has been the collective action of government at every level with both parties murdering our society, murdering our freedom and independence, the rule of law, and literally murdering people with the corrupt medical practices that have been instituted at the beginning of this, and murdering people with vaccines and looking the other way. You know, we talked about 1,127 people killed last year by the police. In the first 3 months, we've had nearly 3,000 people killed with vaccines. It's three times as much of a problem as police coming after people. But we're not going to talk about the vaccines. No, no, no. Let's all talk about Chauvin. All right, let's talk about Chauvin. Let's talk about the mob. Right after this happened, you have a Minneapolis church goes up in flames as the anti-Chauvin protest rolled by. Now, was that connected to that? We don't know. There were people inside the church. This is a 100-year-old church. People inside the church when it caught fire. They had to be taken out. It's a Polish church I guess Polish lives don't matter. Certainly Christian lives don't. There's still people in the church. The firefighters are able to get the people out of the church, but they were not able to save the historic building. Very heavy damage. They said the building is a total loss. They may be able to salvage some of the antique stained glass windows. But they said because of the construction of the church, the fire spread quickly to the attic area, eventually burned through the roof. So unfortunately, we weren't able to save this one. But we were able to save individual lives. That's not exactly clear whether this was arson conducted by the people in the aftermath of this, but there is absolutely no doubt of who was doing this or what the motivations were when we had a Black Lives Matter mob attack a truck driver during their victory riots. You know, I mean, you got the verdict you wanted, but maybe not the Nike shoes, right? And this did not end the way that the Reginald Denny situation did in the wake of the Rodney King riots, where he was an innocent truck driver, was pulled out of his truck, struck with cinder blocks. That did not happen with this particular truck driver. Take a look at what did happen. They're on top of the truck. They're jumping on the truck. They're trying to get into the truck. On the back of the cab, on the side of the cab. We just had somebody fall off of the front of the cab, standing on it. Now the truck driver is driving away, blowing the horn. They're starting to back off in the distance a little bit, and then they chase the truck down the road. This happened just minutes after Chauvin was found guilty on all counts to satiate the mob. And I think that's what they're talking about. So yeah, in the video, the driver blows his horn. They try to block him, but he goes ahead anyway. "Hit him again," said one protester. "You effing hit him again. You're going to be effed up, big boy," said another protester. "Today is not the day, but we'll get you." Oh, isn't that nice? These people just want justice, right? What justice? What did the truck driver do? Angered protesters continued to chase a truck as he drove away. The Minneapolis police chief said, "Now is the time to use our humanity to lift each other up and to not tear our city down." But they didn't really have too much confidence that that was going to be the case, because as the verdict was about to roll out, all the court employees were notified to stop working and exit downtown immediately. And so as we look at this, the sentencing will be taking place in 8 weeks. There'll be a consideration. The next thing that the court will do will be a determination about whether or not there are aggravating factors. Possible aggravating factor is when the victim was, quote, treated with particular cruelty, unquote. A second aggravating factor would be if children are present. And there were two teens who were 17 at the time that this happened, as well as a 9-year-old. Now, if there is aggravating factors, the judge could go all the way up to the statutory maximum. One of these counts, and he was found guilty on 3 counts, one of the accounts, they could go to 40 years. The second count, they could go up to 25 years, and the third count up to 10 years. So this could be a very big issue. Now, the defense, the prosecuting attorney, we talk about the facts of the situation. Well, first of all, let's talk about the facts of the case. And there were 3 different charges of murder, various degrees. That's what we're talking about, the different charges. As he was making the argument, and the argument was that he had coronary issues, that he was also on fentanyl, and then the third argument was that there was no evidence that he had suffocated. So when you look at the physical evidence, yet it was the case was made, as the prosecutor said. You've heard that Mr. Floyd died because his heart was too big, enlarged. He goes, no, he's dead because Mr. Chauvin's heart was too small. That guy's a good lawyer. Not necessarily. don't know that that's really the case. And again, I did not get caught up in the details. Here's what some of the people have pointed out. And the charges were unintentional second-degree murder while committing a felony, guilty. A third-degree murder, perpetrating the imminently dangerous act, guilty. And second-degree manslaughter, guilty of that as well. The county coroner told a prosecutor that Floyd had taken a fatal dose of fentanyl. And the autopsy found that Chauvin, who had pinned Floyd to the ground because he resisted arrest, inflicted no life-threatening injuries. So that's what came out of the county coroner. The autopsy also found that he suffered severe coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, and hypertensive heart disease. The other side of this, and again, you know, when the instructions that were given to the jury, that's a New American pointing out what the physical evidence from the experts who testified there. And of course, if you look at the instructions given to the jury, you see things like, first of all, you have to understand there's a presumption of innocence. The proof needs to be beyond a reasonable doubt. There needs to be direct and circumstantial evidence. That's what we were just talking about here. So let's talk a little bit about the direct and circumstantial evidence, because Jonathan Turley weighed in on how the press was conducting the trial, because that's really the way that this was conducted. For the purposes of racism, again, jurors could not believe that a reasonable officer would have done what Derek Chauvin did, says Reason Magazine. So I just read you what the New American pointed out. The standpoint that the coroner said that he had a fatal dose of fentanyl, that there was no evidence that there was any death by suffocation or anything else, any other injury that would have caused his death. And Reason looks at it from a different perspective. They said, while the defense repeatedly speculated about other factors that might have contributed to Floyd's death, including his heart disease and his drug use, there was never any real doubt that he would have survived this encounter if Chauvin had handled it differently. Defense attorney Eric Nelson implicitly conceded as much when he argued in a pretrial motion that Floyd, quote, may have survived, unquote, if officers Alexander Koenig, I guess is how you pronounce it, and Thomas Lane had arrested Floyd for using a phony $20 bill to buy cigarettes, if they had chosen to de-escalate instead of to start the struggle. Forensic pathologist David Fowler rejected the prosecution's argument that Floyd died from asphyxia, again, that he was smothered, describing the cause as sudden cardiac arrhythmia. Yet Fowler cited the very stressful situation created by the prolonged prone restraint as an important factor, which hardly let Chauvin off the hook. So you can look at this and you can say, well, you know, this is a petty crime. This escalated. One of the reasons that it escalated, because if you look at the video other than just the thing on his neck, you see that he freaked out. He might have freaked out because he's under the influence of drugs. The drug would also have magnified any heart conditions that he had. It's not a clear-cut case to me. And again, I have not looked at all the details. Reason, in terms of their supporting the verdict, so the chief medical examiner, Andrew Baker, did not mention asphyxia in his autopsy report, but he didn't rule out the possibility that impeded breathing contributed to cardiopulmonary arrest. Then Chicago pulmonologist Martin Tobin explained in detail how being pressed against the pavement by Chauvin's knees and by other officers' hands would have made it impossible for Floyd to breathe properly. Tobin was highly credible and unflappable with his testimony, reinforced the commonsensical inference that a man who complains 27 times that he can't breathe while being squeezed between three cops and the asphalt might actually be having trouble breathing. Even after Floyd no longer had a detectable pulse, Chauvin kept kneeling on him. And so the prosecutor wondered, how can you justify the continued use of force against a man who has no pulse? The third-degree murder charge is legally controversial. Some case law suggests it is appropriate. only when a defendant's dangerous conduct did not target any particular individual, as when somebody blindly fires a gun into a crowd. Contrary to that view, former Minneapolis police officer Mohammed Noor, remember this, who fatally shot Justine Diamond, and remember, they've had so many incidents there in Minneapolis, and that was a black cop, a Somali immigrant, Mohammed Noor. Justine Diamond called the police, called 911 to report a possible assault in the alley behind her house. She said she'd heard gunshots. So the guy shows up, and she's in the car, and he shoots her. I think she was in the car. Anyway, he shot her, the woman who called the police. He's had not been out of police academy for very long. And interestingly enough, Justine Diamond, Australian, and who was marrying an American, had participated in previous events there in Minneapolis, marched to get the police department there changed. Now, here's the legal aspects of this that I find very troubling, and Jonathan Turley finds it very troubling as well. He talks about how the press responded throughout all this. The press and the politicians are the things that I have a problem with. I look at this, and again, I didn't follow the details of it. It could have gone either way. And we have so many cases that happen all the time, and again, they never focus on this unless it is a white cop and a black individual. They're not interested about 1,100 people that died, and they are doing everything they can to cover up the 3,000 people that have been killed with the vaccines in just 3 months. So when you look at that, you're talking about three times the number of people killed in one quarter of the time. You've got 12 times the number of people being killed by vaccines as being killed by police in these situations. And not all those, you know, they had a small number of those were people that were involved in violent crimes, and you could understand that certainly. So we're not paying attention to the really important things. And the way that they're covering this trial, the way the politicians are using it to push a race war, the way the press is using this to push a race war, is what Jonathan Turley takes on. He said, journalists seemed more set on advocating than on reporting on the underlying issues. For example, CNN's senior legal analyst, Laura Coates, this is their senior legal analyst, declared, quote, defense begins the closing by defining reasonable doubt and not with why Derek Chauvin is innocent. Think about that. He says, well, many of us did think about that, particularly those of us who are criminal defense lawyers. And again, if we go back to the instructions given to the jury, what do they say? Presumption of innocence, number one. Number two, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Number three, direct and circumstantial evidence. He said, my guess is that over 90% of defense arguments began with defining reasonable doubt, since that is the framing standard for a jury decision. It is the virtual mantra of the defense. We start by reminding the jury of its burden, particularly after a prosecutor is given a more fluid understanding of that standard. The last thing you want to do as a criminal defense attorney is to suggest that the jury should focus on whether a defendant is innocent. The burden of proof, because remember that first thing, presumption of innocence? The burden of proof is on the prosecutor that beyond a reasonable doubt, this person did it. They're presumed innocent, and you have to show that. So he says the burden of proof is on the prosecutor to prove that he's guilty. The defense does not have to prove a thing for acquittal. But that's not the mentality of the CNN legal expert. And that's not the mentality of America today. We have people who are being locked up all the time. You haven't even been given a medical exam, but we got a test here that says that you're guilty. You don't have any symptoms. You haven't displayed any symptoms. You haven't done anything to anybody, but we're going to put you in indefinite detention. We are saying that you are hateful. You have, as a matter of fact, unconscious bias. Unconscious bias. You are unconsciously racist. You're racist just because you're white. You don't have to do anything, right? And so we don't have the presumption of innocence. We don't have the presumption of innocence with civil asset forfeiture. We don't bother with that anymore. This is how we've moved our society. And then he goes on to talk about PBS NewsHour correspondent Yamichi Alcindor. I don't watch PBS. Went on to attack the minute the defense rose to make its closing argument. Alcindor declared, quote, Chauvin's lawyer said it flies in the face of common sense to say Floyd's death was not caused, at least in part, by his underlying conditions or drug use. This argument is in direct contradiction to the prosecution's case, which says, believe your eyes, Chauvin's knee killed Floyd. Jonathan Turley responds and says, the statement is so bizarre, so biased, that it is breathtaking. PBS's Alcindor appears aggrieved that the defense had the temerity to contradict the prosecution on the question of guilt. This is now what PBS considers to be professional journalism. The saddest aspect to this trend is that legal analysis was once largely immune from such open bias. But there isn't anything that is immune from bias anymore. House Democrats have blocked Kevin McCarthy's resolution to censure Maxine Waters. Kevin McCarthy, again, the minority leader. They have the votes to block the censure of Maxine Waters for the comments she made in the midst of all of this after there had been violence, saying we got to stay on the streets and we got to escalate this, right? Steve Scalise said, I was shot because of the kind of dangerous rhetoric repeated by Maxine Waters. And then I think perhaps one of the most disgusting uses of racism, and that is by the Secretary of State, Biden's Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, saying that climate change is a powerful tool against systemic racism. So we have to fight racism, and the way we fight racism is with climate change. And the way we fight climate change is with the UN 2030 agenda and the Great Reset and the rest of this stuff. Isn't it interesting that the Biden administration, like the Trump administration, has a Secretary of State whose first priority is the Paris Climate Accord? That was Rex Tillerson's first priority. Rex Tillerson fought with Trump, and so did Ivanka Trump the first 6 months. They did not want him to get out of the Paris Climate Accord. Eventually said, even though it was not a legitimate treaty, he said, well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to be a part of that. But there were other people in the administration who pleaded with President Trump and said, you have to say that we're not in this. And you have to make a formal declaration to shut this thing down, because they presumed, we were told, that John Kerry, previous Secretary of State, always a Secretary of State's, John Kerry had self-ratified this, he and Obama. That's not the way you ratify a treaty. The real answer, which Steve Malloy pointed out, and I had him on to talk about this, and he did it right after the election. He said one of the things that President Trump needs to do is to make sure, in case, you know, his what he was supposedly doing was pushing back against the election results, but that was pretty clear that wasn't going to work, and pretty clear that he wasn't really doing anything. Nevertheless, he had 60 days or so, 60, 70 days between the election and between Biden coming in. He said what he needs to do is he needs to focus on getting Mitch McConnell to hold a straight-up vote, because they were also going to lose not just the presidency, but lose the Senate control. He said in these last few days, he should be pressuring Mitch McConnell to hold a vote on the Paris Climate Treaty and to defeat it once and for all. That's the way you drive the stake into its heart. So President Trump, after 6 months of being hectored by Rex Tillerson and Ivanka, did say, we're not going to be in the Paris Climate Accord, but he did not pull out of it until the day after the election. He waited nearly 4 years to pull out of it, and it was a moot point. Because if you're going to assume that we can be put into a treaty that is going to completely reorganize our society and our industrial base to the advantage of the Chinese, it's not about global warming, it's about allowing the Chinese to build as many and as dirty a power plants as they wish without any limit while they cap our energy usage. If you're going to say that that can be started or stopped by the president instead of going through the constitutional procedure of having the Senate vote on the treaty, if you're going to do that, then the next president can just undo that. It was absolutely meaningless what he did. And so here we are with the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, saying climate change, pushing it again very hard, and piggybacking onto this show trial and saying this is how we stop racism, is with climate change. They will use whatever they can, race war, skin color, a police case that has very, very, very bad optics, whether it, and again, I'm not taking a side one way or the other on this. Pretty amazing to me that they could ignore the circumstantial evidence about a fatal dose of fentanyl that might have affected not only his heart, but his behavior. Nevertheless, the whole point of this was to push racism so they could push us to fight each other instead of fighting them for what they're doing. And then to take this and use this to push climate change. Climate change, the basis for locking in everything that's been done to us in this lockdown this last year. Blinken went on to say, it's difficult to imagine the United States winning the long-term strategic competition with China if we cannot lead the renewable energy revolution. Let me tell you something. If you go into renewable energy, they will win. They're not foolish enough in China to pursue the kind of renewable energy that created this catastrophe in Texas over the winter, or nearly had another one last week during mild weather. We are destroying our own infrastructure just like we're consciously destroying our own society with this renewable energy. That's been something I've been on about 15 years working on. This is an old problem. Getting so tired of predicting these problems decades out in advance and seeing them unfold in slow motion, having a front row seat to this kind of stuff. It disgusts me. The Chinese are not concerned whatsoever about renewable energy. The Chinese, under this climate accord, can build as many, India as well, as many and as dirty a power plants running coal as they want without any penalty. We are the ones who are destroying our energy grid. And when we talk about insurrection and incitement and what is happening in the aftermath of this trial and the threats by the mob to find them guilty, 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 and Maxine Waters, it's interesting to me, and this was pointed out by Chris Minahan of Information Liberation. He said the GOP has absolutely done nothing for these Capitol 6 protesters, the January 6 protesters. I call them the Capitol 6. Elizabeth Warren stepped up and talked about the horrific treatment that is happening to some of these people being held in confinement. This story is on informationliberation.com. Capitol protesters are being tortured, beaten, racially abused, locked in solitary confinement, held in indefinite detention. Yet their Republican representatives are refusing to speak out, just like they won't say anything to defend our freedom for the last year. Now they're finally throwing some insults at Fauci, finally. And they don't really matter what they're doing. But they won't even say anything about what's happening to these people. In contrast, Elizabeth Warren, who previously condemned the Capitol protesters as domestic terrorists, is now speaking out and condemning the, quote, cruel and psychologically damaging abuse that they're being subjected to by being locked in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day. You know, the pastor in Canada was locked in for 23 hours and 45 minutes a day in solitary confinement for the first 2 weeks, trying to break him, and that's exactly what they're doing to these people. Elizabeth Warren said, quote, solitary confinement is a form of punishment that is cruel and psychologically damaging. Information Liberation points out most of the 300-plus people charged with participating in the January 6th Capitol riot have been released while they await trial, but dozens of those deemed to be dangerous and or flight risks or at a high risk of obstructing justice were ordered to be held without bond. D.C. jail officials later determined that all Capitol detainees would be placed in so-called restrictive housing, a move billed as necessary to keep the defendants safe as well as guards and other inmates. But that means 23 hours a day isolation for the accused even before their trials began. Elizabeth Warren says, we're talking about people who haven't been convicted of anything yet. Remember that thing about presumption of innocence? Remember that excessive punishment? Due process? Speedy trial? Right to bail? All these different things? Elizabeth Warren says she's worried that law enforcement officials are deploying it to punish the January 6th defendants, or to break them in a way that they will cooperate. Right. Politico previously reported that defendant Ryan Samsel was severely beaten, is how they put it, by D.C. correctional officers and is now blind in one eye and has a skull fracture and a detached retina, according to his attorney. Yeah, Ammon Bundy, when he was in jail before, they severely beat him as well. Injured his hip. Another defendant, 60-year-old Richard Barnett, was being held in indefinite detention for daring to put up his feet on Pelosi's desk. He was reportedly, quote, tackled to the ground, as Politico puts it, by D.C. correction officers who told him they, quote, hate all white people. This is not normal. It's not normal to isolate people to make them eat on the floor, said Marty Hankleft, a defense attorney, representing two of the detained defendants. Hankleft himself, the attorney himself, was imprisoned for nearly two decades on a murder conviction before his 2008 exoneration. And he urged other lawmakers who see the January the 6th defendants' conditions as unjust to contact him. Yeah, that guy has got a real passion. You want to talk about justice? You talk to this guy who was in jail unjustly on a murder conviction for two decades and then became an attorney. Attorneys for a slew of other accused rioters, meanwhile, say their clients' conditions have made it nearly impossible to conduct genuine attorney-client meetings. Two defendants have contracted COVID in the D.C. jail. And again, the other one has had permanent eye damage from beatings. Others have lodged complaints about access to needed medication or to health monitoring, prompting intervention from judges. Some January the 6th defendants have contended that there is a racial component to their treatment because most of them are white, while most of the D.C. inmates and prison guards are black. Judge Paul Friedman said last week that those concerns are, quote, not necessarily illegitimate. He said, quote, listen to this. It may be, that some of the people arrested on January 6th are white supremacists, or that they're perceived to be. Oh, so if they may be white supremacists, or if you perceive them to be white supremacists, even if they're not, and even if they haven't had a trial, then you are free to brutalize them for racial purposes, says the judge. Yeah, you want to talk about justice, social justice? You want to talk about a race war that's being fed here? The majority of those arrested were down and out Americans struggling to survive after seeing their livelihoods destroyed by their own government during the lockdown, not because Trump lost, but because of the lockdown that Trump presided over, just as the Republicans are not doing anything to help these people who vainly put their hope in a political party to solve their problem. Their problems inflicted on them by bipartisan politics. So the torture is going to continue as long as our cowardly and corrupt GOP leadership stays silent. And that's true not just of the Capitol 6 protesters, but that is true of all of us in this lockdown. Joseph Farah talked about the insurrection. Joseph Farah, WorldNet Daily editor, who is now glad to see that he's now back writing. He had a severe stroke a couple of years ago, and he's recovered enough that he can write. And Joseph Farah and WorldNet Daily, to their credit, I think, took up the case of he's talking in this particular one about Ashley Babbitt and how outrageous it is that we don't even know who this police officer is who murdered her in cold blood. I mean, you want to talk about the Derek Chauvin case? You should talk about the Ashley Babbitt case. And he contrasts that. He says, think about this. We don't even know the name of this guy. It's none of our business to even know the name of this guy who murdered Ashley Babbitt. There was no threat to him. There was no warning shot fired. You want to talk about excessive use of force? Let's talk about Ashley Babbitt. No, no, no. We're not going to talk about that because it's about politics. It's about skin color. It's about their agenda of race war. And he says, compare the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis, of course, also to a case that they championed a few years ago. A black woman, Miriam Carey, made a wrong turn, went to the White House, and panicked. And the Capitol Police and Secret Service fired many, many shots and executed that black woman who took a wrong turn and then panicked for the police. How her child in the back seat survived is a miracle. But it just points out how uneven the justice system is here. They don't have to give the names of the officers involved in that shooting, and they haven't. Just like they haven't given the name of the officer involved in the shooting of Ashley Babbitt. This is the arrogance of Washington, D.C. The most arrogant and out-of-control branch of our arrogant and out-of-control government at pretty much every level. So if you want to talk about that, let's talk about who shot Miriam Carey a few years ago, murdered her. What crime did she commit? She turned the wrong way and she panicked. Or talk about Ashley Babbitt, who was murdered. No, we're not even allowed to know the names of those officers, and they can do anything that they wish. That's where we are today. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about America Held Hostage, show you that video of the pub owner throwing out the Labor MP. We'll pick up the pace here a little bit.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right. Day 403 of America Held Hostage, and the rest of the world as well. And the media was triumphant about the fact that Ted Nugent said that he has tested positive and had a very rough go of it with COVID-19. So let's talk about that. They crowed about this, saying Ted Nugent, this is a Drudge Report, picked this up, of course. Ted Nugent long downplayed the COVID-19 pandemic as a scam. He revealed his diagnosis on Facebook, that he has been sicker than a dog. Well, maybe it was cat scratch fever. Maybe it wasn't COVID. Do we know? He said his symptoms included stuffed up head and body aches. I've had flu symptoms for the last 10 days, and I thought I was dying. I literally could hardly crawl out of bed the last few days, but I did. I crawled. Well, let me just say this. Ted is 72 years old. And I have found that every time I get a bad flu case, I think I'm going to die anymore. And every time I get it, it's worse as I get older. This is one of the things about the flu in general. I thought I was going to die in December 2019. Both my wife and I were really bad off. You know, Though we didn't get the COVID treatment, we got a treatment for the flu, which works for COVID as well. There's a if you have the right kind of treatment, it's really not that big a deal. It isn't, Ted. I don't know if they are exaggerating his comments, but they are certainly using this to crow about it. But, you know, the interesting point is that he didn't die, did he? He had a bad case of the flu and he got over it. Oh, but see, he was a COVID skeptic. On Christmas, Nugent said the coronavirus is, quote, not a real pandemic, and that's not a real vaccine. Well, he's right about both of those. They go back and they reference something that he said last year, where he asked why there's no lockdowns for COVID 1 through 18. Why are we having a COVID 19? That it appeared that he was not joking. And I have seen this. I think it was Sarah Palin also, type of thing. See, this is the problem. If you're going to speak out about this, you should actually know what you're talking about. This goes for the people who are opposing it, as well as the people who are supporting it, like Franklin Graham and others. People who are supporting the vaccines. Like, educate yourself about what's going on here. Al Mohler, Franklin Graham, even Ted Nugent. If you're going to talk about COVID 1 through 18, it wasn't COVID 19. It was COVID 19 because it was 2019. But in a sense, they're right, because we've never, ever had any flu that we have, or any kind of so-called pandemic, that we've taken these kinds of measures. And the very fact that he survived tells us that we are overreacting. And as we look at the lockdown, we see that it hasn't made any difference whatsoever. And the vaccine is at a record amount in terms of deaths and adverse effects. But again, they will crow about the fact that Ted Nugent, at 72, got sick. And for 10 days, he was very sick. That is not any news, quite frankly. But let's take a look at the pub owner. Put this on a more positive note. We have a pub owner, name is Keir Starmer, co-owner of a pub in Bath, England. And the co-owner that is there was not very happy about what happened. He said, "We are getting death by social media. People are not very happy with this." And I don't share those opinions, but this guy is absolutely unrepentant. He knows. This guy knows what he's talking about, unlike Ted Nugent. And he is passionate, like we saw with Artur Perlowski last year. Here's the first encounter that he had, and it's a little bit, the volume is a little bit low, so listen carefully to what he has to say.
I am truthfully incandescent about the job you've done. Yes. Do you know what the average age of death with COVID is?
You know what the average age of death is? He's showing him sheets.
82 years and 3 months. The average age of death normally? 81 years. Do you understand that we have f***ed our economy because old people are dying? Do you see this graph? The last time we had this much death was 2008. That's the British Medical Journal.
That's the story that I covered yesterday.
No, I came here to speak to this man, not your security. You failed me.
Thank you.
I've been a Labour voter my entire life. You have failed to be the opposition. You have failed to ask whether lockdown
sorry,
was functioning.
Sorry, there's a car just behind. Can we just...
Do you understand?
Should we go on in?
Thousands of people have died because you have failed to do your job and ask the real questions. Well, I am telling you now, and I hope this goes out, you have failed this country. You have seriously failed. You have allowed our children to wear masks in school when it's never been any evidence for it.
Guys, you can't have car food, please. Do you want to come on in here, Mum?
Go on in, they've been on the front line keeping people alive. So I'm really going to need lectures from you about this pandemic.
You've got one.
All right. And now you can see that bodyguard. You can see that bodyguard there just itching to get involved. He kept his hands in his pockets, and he let the guy have it with both barrels verbally. And if you didn't hear all that, he said, You know, the average age of death from COVID is 82 and 3 months. The average age of death normally is 81. What that tells us is that when people get old, they die. The last time deaths were at this same rate was 2008. Do you remember all of this happening then? No, because it didn't happen then. And so he was telling Humphreys, this guy that's there. I'm sorry, Humphreys is the name of the pub owner. MP that is there is Sir Starmer. That's Sir Starmer. And that was Humphreys talking to Sir Starmer. he's knighted. I think they're benighted is actually what has happened to that country and to that party. Mr. Humphreys said that he thought the labor leader should have opposed lockdown based on the evidence from other places like Florida, which have not implemented widespread shutdowns. He was absolutely unrepentant, as even though his co-owner is freaking out and saying, I don't share his opinions, please. You know, everybody's killing us on social media, but there's a lot of people who are very happy with what he's doing. And if I could travel to Bath, England, I would go to your pub. Here is what happened when they tried to push their way in. And I don't know if this happened before or after, but just listen to this.
That man is not allowed in my pub. Get out of my pub. Go on. Get out of my pub.
So he can keep out the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, he runs him off. Get out of my pub. That man is not allowed in my pub. Get out of my pub. And so he said he was unapologetic. He says he doesn't care what happens to his business because these people are killing his business anyway. He said, it's obvious that lockdowns do not save lives, but to me, this is a matter of principle. It's bigger than anything else going on at this moment. Absolutely. I wonder if he's a listener. I should get him on. It's bigger than this pub. If it damages the pub, whatever. This is a lot more serious than that. Right. Right. Because it's going to be more serious than just losing your livelihood, just losing the business that you poured blood, sweat, tears, and all of your money into. It's more important even than that. And this is what the sorry politician, Sir Starmer, had to say to the press.
I think most people across the country would profoundly disagree. I think the vast majority of people here in Bath and elsewhere recognise that the lockdown was necessary, the restrictions are necessary, that we need to come slowly and carefully out of them so we never go back into a lockdown. But he took the opposite view, which is that we shouldn't have restrictions. I profoundly disagree with that.
Well, it was interesting to spot it, but a lot of people believe that the
Well, he took the opposite view, but of course I know better because I'm Sir Starmer, I'm a politician, and my wife works for the NHS. He said, so I really don't need lectures about you from this pandemic. He doesn't need to see the data either. Who cares about the data? They don't care. And he said one of the other things that Humphreys, the pub owner, said, thousands of people have died because you failed to do your job and ask real questions. You've allowed our children to wear masks in school where there's never been any evidence for doing that. You failed to be the opposition. You failed to ask if the lockdowns are functioning. You've failed to oppose Boris Johnson on all of this because Boris Johnson was talking about how wonderful it was that the greed had produced this vaccine. He was exactly right about that. Not wonderful, but it is greed that has produced the vaccine. He said, why isn't he asking these questions? He just sat by and he didn't challenge it, just like our Republicans didn't, while the Democrats cheerleaded it. He has consigned people to death by poverty, to death by unemployment, to death by despair and alcoholism by not challenging these decisions. He's a labor leader. He should be standing up for us. But I would have said the same thing to Boris or any of them. It would be very hard for me to vote Labor now, but I don't know who I'd vote for. And that's the problem that we have in every one of these countries. There's not anybody in any party, whether it's Labor or Tory or Conservative or Liberal or Democrat or Republican. nationalist, globalist, socialist, Marxist, they're all on the same page. Every single one of these politicians in every country. To me, that's the most amazing thing. How it's all happening in lockstep, just as the Rockefeller Foundation was hoping, and how that lockstep has extended to every nation and to every political party. It doesn't matter if the people are nationalist or globalist, conservative or liberal. Doesn't matter. They're all in on this. The lockdown paradigm, however, is collapsing, says the American Institute for Economic Research. It's taken much longer than it should have. But at last now it seems to be happening. The lockdown paradigm is collapsing, and the signs are all around us. The one-time hero of the lockdown, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, is now deeply unpopular. Most voters want him to resign, but unfortunately not for the right reasons. As Gerald Celente pointed out a few weeks ago, he goes, you know, these accusations against him about trying to hold somebody's hand or whatever, or trying to kiss them, pales in comparison to the people that he executed, to the destruction to the economy, to the imposition of draconian, authoritarian communism. But they're not upset about that, really. Really not. Because, you know, there's nothing other than sexual harassment that gets people excited anymore. Jim Jordan demanded Dr. Fauci account for why closed Michigan has worse disease prevalence than neighboring Wisconsin, which has long been entirely open. Fauci pretended he couldn't hear the question, that he couldn't see the chart, that he didn't understand, and finally he just sat there silent after having uttered a few banalities about enforcement differentials. Fauci doesn't need to answer. Fauci knows he has power. When you know that you have power, you'll stop asking these people these questions, and you'll stop debating them, and you'll start to live your life in defiance of these rules. And then we'll have an argument about this. We'll extend that further, as they're doing now with the Pastor James Coates in Canada, defying the rules, living the truth, exposing the lie by the way they're living. If you do that, we'll win. If you wait for these politicians to do something like Jim Jordan, like Rand Paul, even the best of them are doing nothing. They're AWOL. Lockdowners are now dealing with the big problem of Texas. Or compare California with closed California, with open Florida, and similar death rates. Sweden, which stayed open, performed better than most of Europe, especially the UK. The problem is that the presence or absence of lockdowns in the face of the virus seems completely uncorrelated with any disease trajectory. Even their own manipulated data doesn't prove their case for lockdown. That's a big problem for them. This is devastating because the scientists who push lockdowns have made specific and falsifiable predictions. Exactly. That is it. When the idea was first floated, it was greeted with ferocious opposition. Over time, the lockdown paradigm made progress with funding from the Gates Foundation and more recruits from within academia and the bureaucracy. Well, yes, and we knew where this was headed. There was no question about this. For 20 years, they've been modeling draconian lockdown until they can produce a rushed vaccine for everybody. That was always a solution. They practiced the lie. They practiced the PR. They trained the bureaucrats who were going to be carrying this out. That was what they needed to do. And then a couple of years ago, a goat tree contacted me and said, hey, there's a lot of chatter everywhere about dark winter too. And you know what that means. They could be trying to pull off what they simulated with dark winter. And sure enough, they did. No doubt about it. Canadian conservative think tank is going to host the Adverse Impacts of COVID Lockdowns event. Of course, they're going to have to do it online. But still, at least they're pushing back on this. For over a year now, Canadians have been in an endless cycle of lockdowns. There is one exception in the media, and that is a writer for The Sun, Anthony Fury. Fury is one of the few Canadian mainstream media reporters who's questioned extended lockdowns on a regular basis. This is a report from LifeSite News. It's become clear that there are too many Canadians getting their news in an echo chamber, he said, completely unaware that many experts here oppose lockdown. This thread compiles news stories on these Canadian experts who oppose lockdown. I hope it's a useful resource that gets this news shared widely. That's one of the things that we can take away from the Derek Chauvin case, right? I mentioned this once before, twice, maybe. Whenever you have expert testimony in a trial, you always have, and this is what some of the lawyers who have opposed the lockdown, the COVID narrative, and so forth have pointed out, said, having experts is not an ironclad thing. In every criminal trial, you're going to bring in, or even a civil trial where there's allegations of injuries, you're going to bring in people who are experts in their field. You're not going to have them testify unless they've got really, really good credentials. A lot of experience, a lot of degrees, a lot of awards. And guess what? In that trial, just like we saw in the Chauvin trial, you're going to have conflicting testimony from these experts, all of whom have wonderful credentials. But we're not allowed to hear the other side testify in these COVID lockdowns. This is an indefinite detention without trial for every country on earth. We're not allowed to hear from the other experts. If they put together something, no matter how many thousands of them there are with the Great Barrington Declaration, no matter, we're not allowed. And if those people speak out, they lose their careers. They're fired. They're canceled on social media. People who share what they have to say are shut down. That should be all that you need to know. First-level thinking, writes an RT piece, first-level thinking is threatening the lives of millions and causing more destruction than COVID. I said, well, you might think that, you know, first-level, that maybe sounds good. No, this is just talking about somebody who is not playing, shall we say, 4D chess. How is it that a chess program, how does it compete with humans? Well, what it does is it starts to, it runs through one possible move, and then it thinks about what all the different permutations of responses to that could be, and then all the permutations of responses to those responses, and so on and so forth. And it goes down several different levels, looking at all the different things that can happen. And although that's not really what's meant by 4D chess, that's the way a computer algorithm would think, and that's really kind of the way a chess master thinks. And they began to win games when they could get computers that were fast enough that they could take that decision tree further and further out to more and more levels. But see, we're not doing that. Trump never played 4D chess. Quite frankly, he never played 1D chess either. He's playing checkers, if he's playing anything. He's probably playing the roulette wheel at his casino. That's probably what he was playing. Because, you know, if you go to a casino, you don't understand anything about probabilities. And Trump apparently didn't. I guess he let other people set the game up for him, just like he let Fauci set up this game. But first-level thinking means that you're just going to respond to an input. You're not going to think about possible consequences or what happens down the road, further down. First-level thinking focuses on solving an immediate problem with little or no consideration of the potential consequences. First-level thinking is just simplistic. It's superficial. It's Trumpian. And just about everybody can do it. The biggest drivers of first-level thinking are panic and outrage. Remember when you had Peggy Noonan and Matt Drudge trumpeting this thing? If you're not panicking now, you don't understand the situation. It's like, no, panic is never the right response. Panic is always just first-level thinking. And it's not even thinking. It's just reaction. It's just visceral reaction without thinking through what happens next. Always was. Those raw and powerful emotions trigger a flight or fight reaction that demands a response to take the edge off, regardless of what additional disasters such a solution could trigger. I remember having this discussion when, way back, what was it, 93, right after Bill Clinton got elected, I think immediately Hillary decided that she was going to restructure all health care, which now they've done, by the way, thanks to Trump. We now have Hillary Care and Obamacare on steroids because we now have the government deciding what you can and cannot have. They're now rationing health care to anybody that is not tested positive on their PCR tests. They're now mandating all of that. And we now see government corruption and micromanagement of healthcare and what that has wrought in our society. But when it was being put out there, I remember going to these meetings and speaking when the Democrats would speak. They would get up and say, well, we have a situation here, and let me give you an anecdote of somebody who can't afford medical care. I know it's a tragedy and it happens, but there's other things that can happen, like what we're seeing right now with the government mandates what you can have and what you must have, where the government manages everything and creates even worse rationing. And so they said, we've got to do something. We have to do something. And I said, well, think about it. I said, if you got a fire and you got a bucket and it's got some liquid in it, do you think you might want to see if that's water or gasoline? And even if it's water, if you don't know the nature of the fire, that might make it worse if it's electrical fire. So you might want to stop and think about what you're doing. Think about the consequences as this moves out. But in terms of lockdown, we now have, listen to this, the U.S. State Department has issued level 4 do not travel advisory for 80% of the countries on Earth now. What is level 4? Level 4 has always been reserved for countries that are in a state of war or hostile to America. Places like North Korea and Afghanistan, those have always been level 4. And now we're saying because of COVID, 80% of the countries on Earth are off limits to us, just like Afghanistan and North Korea would be for travel. You realize how insane this is? Oh, and by the way, do you know where the State Department is basing its decision on? The CDC. The CDC has made 80% of the countries on Earth off limits for Americans, just like the CDC under Trump, with its epidemiological assessments, determined that you can't have any evictions for, well, until we have completely destroyed the main depository of wealth for the middle class, and that is homes that people are renting. CDC has taken that on. The CDC has told us that we can't go to 80% of the countries. They're marked in red, level 4, just like Iraq, North Korea, Syria, Afghanistan, the entire world. If you don't think that this is a war being conducted, especially on the middle class here. Economic sanctions, restrictions, now level 4 redlining of countries. Is herd immunity to COVID-19 possible? USA Today says experts are increasingly saying no, which means that they're selling you lockdown forever. Oh, our vaccines can't handle that. No, no, no. Can't handle that, so you're going to be locked down forever. You know, quite frankly, as Ted Nugent is bellyaching about COVID, foolishly giving a narrative to attack people, or maybe he now is a COVID panic purveyor. I don't know. Maybe they're exaggerating his comments, or maybe he just can't think past the first level when he opens his mouth. But, you know, there's a way, Ted, that you can handle that. There's a lot of treatments out there. If you really want to get involved and have an opinion about the lockdown, maybe you ought to listen to so many of the doctors who have so many simple therapies to stop this. I mean, you got a lot to choose from. You got HCQ, you got ivermectin, you've got even steroid asthma spray. Over and over and over again. I can't even recall how many different treatments there are besides vaccines to arrest this and stop it in its early stages. And of course, Ted didn't have to go to the hospital. He just had a bad case of the flu and he tested positive on PCR. But that's being used for propaganda. He's letting that being used for propaganda. I couldn't find anywhere where he pushed back. Now the Department of Justice is targeting vitamin companies that are sponsoring Steve Bannon's program. I think it's a podcast that he had. They're targeting that. And these are vitamins like vitamin D and vitamin C. These are things which, before any of this stuff was locked down, and even after, you had people at the FDA, you had people at the NIH saying, well, it's not going to kill the virus, but it helps to support your immune system. Remember that? Remember when we used to talk about having an immune system? You have to pretend that you don't have one now. Even though the government itself has confirmed through scientific studies that the contents of these vitamins and of this particular product are integral parts of the immune system, and that they show synergistic functions at various stages of host defenses, such as the maintenance of the integrity of biological barriers and the functionality of cells that make up the innate and adaptive systems, the government said. It is an important measure to improve the immune system and to prevent the development of severe symptoms. Nevertheless, they filed a civil complaint. Now, the civil complaint does not name Bannon directly, but they contend that his sponsor is pushing out a, quote, unproven COVID-19 treatment. Think about the fact that Health and Human Services under Trump had Alex Azar, the former CEO of Eli Lilly, one of the biggest, most politically influential pharmaceutical companies, HHS Alex Azar, big pharma CEO. And then that under Trump, the FDA appointment, the head of the FDA, Scott Gottlieb, is now on the board of Pfizer. Isn't that interesting? They have cited Eric Anthony Nepute and his company QuickWork LLC, who are doing business as Wellness Warrior. I also find it interesting that Bannon's show is called War Room. You know, there's a lot of war rooms out there. I had Real News was the first name that we had. And there's a lot of real news out there as well. You know, Trump's daughter-in-law had a Real News. There's a lot of different ones. Mine was Real News with David Knight. But, you know, I was like, nobody has tried to shut down War Room's name. I'm not encouraging anybody to. I think it's legitimate for that to be there everywhere. I think it's legitimate to say Real News, especially if you put your name on there. I wonder why I was the only show that was shut down for having a name like that. But anyway. Just wound up using just my name, so that's fine. Vitamin D3 and zinc. There's a combination of vitamin D3 and zinc that this company was selling. And they even had the disclaimer on there. These statements have, and it's a common disclaimer, all vitamins and natural products, these statements that we say about this have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, to treat, to cure, or to prevent any disease. So why are they coming after them? Well, simply politics. Same reason they came after my name. And I've said for the longest time that if you're going to allow the federal bureaucracy, the FDA, if you're going to allow them to tell you what you can't have, and I've said this for years, it's not going to be long before the government tells you what you must have, because they've destroyed the idea of informed consent. I was called a conspiracy theorist for saying the government's going to tell you what medications you're going to have, and now we see that happening, don't we? We see they're both telling us what we cannot have. I mean, they came after people who were doing intravenous vitamin C. We know that that was very effective, criminalized that, the FDA did. In the complaint in federal court in Missouri, they allege the defendants declare in advertising that the product prevents or treats COVID-19, quote, without competent or reliable scientific evidence. Reports said they also allegedly advertised without scientific evidence that their supplements were equally or more effective therapies for COVID-19 than the currently available vaccines. The vaccines, according to the manufacturers, don't work. China just admitted that theirs doesn't work. Don't wait for Pfizer to tell you that theirs don't work. Don't hold your breath. That's not going to happen. No matter how many times they talk about breakthrough infections, no matter how many times we see people who have gotten the vaccine who subsequently get sick and get everybody around them sick, no matter how many times we see severe adverse reactions, including thousands of deaths, don't ever expect these people to say that their products are not safe, 100% safe, 100% effective. They said a simple web search found hundreds of thousands of promotions for vitamin D and zinc as a supplement and for upper respiratory support. The NIH, and it was actually Scott Gottlieb, was one of the ones who said, well, you know, vitamin D is not going to cure COVID, but it'll boost your immune system. And subsequent to this, we've had the government come out and say that 80% of the people who are in severe stress after a respiratory infection, whether it's COVID or diagnosed as COVID and it's something else, that 80% of those people have a deficiency in vitamin D. Same thing about autoimmune disease. And that having a vitamin D supplement helps to ameliorate those conditions to some degree. So the NIH, the FDA even say that, and yet they're coming after this. I think it's simply politics. The NIH posted online last December that the use of vitamin D and zinc had a focus on physical tissue barrier integrity, the way they put it. They said several minerals and vitamins have antioxidant, immunomodulatory, and antimicrobial roles, which could be helpful for the immune response against SARS-CoV-2. In this review, the role of zinc, vitamin C, and vitamin D for immunity was explored, since these micronutrients show the strongest evidence for immune support, said the report. Finally, it said overall the medical literature demonstrates that supplementation with zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D can mitigate viral respiratory infections. That's the information they don't want you to have. Even more importantly than going after Steve Bannon for his politics, they don't want you to know that there is a simple treatment, Ted Nugent, for respiratory illness. Now, people have always died from flu, especially as we get older. As we get older, it gets harder and harder to shake the symptoms. And as we get older, even after we recover, the symptoms don't go away 100%. But that's no reason for us to all just lock ourselves in our houses, or for the government to lock us in our houses. But it's getting worse. And we'll talk about the vaccines. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back. This is where you can find us, how you can support us. But most importantly, folks, please pass the information along to other people. It's vital that we get this information out. I don't have sponsors for one reason, in terms of health supplements. I talked a lot about vitamin D, and I used to sell vitamin D at my former employer's place. I had no problem doing that. It's not snake oil. Snake oil is the genetic code injection that they're giving people right now. That's the snake oil. Simple supplements and things like that, I have no problem selling it, but they will go to any links to try to shut people down. And so we're really reliant on your support. And we may have to do it a slightly different way, but hopefully we can continue with your support. The way that you can support us, you'll find all of those links at thedavidknightshow.com. And you'll also find where you can find the program to share that, the podcasts, the live streams, the videos that we put up afterwards. We have the full show, plus we cut shorter videos, anywhere from 2 to 10. Sometimes we go up to like 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes I want to just put the entire amount in there. But we put up videos yesterday. I think we put up 7 or 8 videos, including the full show. So take a look at the 4 different places that we're up right now. We're not on YouTube. Probably not going to get back there. And some of the places that were up, like on Rumble, we had to put the show under Roundtable Report because we couldn't get the name returned to us. We couldn't get my name returned to us. Have somebody who is hanging on to that for some reason. Don't exactly know why, but here's where you can find us, thedavidknightshow.com.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, let's talk about the vaccine on this day 403 of this lockdown. We have in Connecticut, the state house there has passed, and listen to this, 90-53, a bill to end religious vaccine exemption. Boy, that pulls it all together, doesn't it? Going to end your religious freedom, going to end your my body, my choice, your informed consent, all of that. We're going to throw all that out, as well as your religious beliefs. Absolute contempt for your decisions about your health care. Absolute contempt for your religion. Because many of us look at what is happening with these vaccines and we simply believe that it is cannibal medicine. And it's only been reinforced by what I've seen come out of the Center for Medical Progress trial, where Kamala Harris, now the vice president, where Javier Becerra, who's now head of HHS, criminalized the people who exposed the criminal activity of murder for hire, being contracted by the FDA and the NIH, wanting specific organs fresh, not frozen, by children for their Nazi medical research. That is reprehensible. And I will not be participating in that. I have so many different reasons to object to this vaccine. There's absolutely no way. I don't trust it. It hasn't been tested. It's new. It's novel. It's untested. It's unethical. And it's ineffective. But in Connecticut, the long-standing religious exemption from immunization requirements for school have been removed, beginning with the 2022-23 school year. So it's not this year, but it'll be the people that start in the fall of the following year. Passed with a 90-53 vote in the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives in Connecticut just before 3 a.m. in the morning. No date has been set for when the Senate, also controlled by Democrats, will vote on the same bill. Kind of interesting, isn't it? How they will be so upset about kids getting shot in a school in Connecticut at Sandy Hook. And yet they're going to shoot your kid before he can even get into school. The Democrat governor, Ned Lamont, reiterated that he's prepared to sign the legislation as soon as it passes the Senate. I remember a Republican president saying, they got to get the shots, right? Remember that? Remember Trump after he got back from Davos in 2019? I guess he had a conference with Klaus Schwab or Bill Gates, because he's given more than 10 times the amount of money for these vaccines than Gates did. And he gave your money. Your money that you and your kids, should they survive long enough, will pay back. He said, "We saw there's a very strong vote in the legislature, which I consider to be supportive of the vaccinations and doing everything we can to encourage, in this case, students to get vaccinated." And he said, the legislation stems from an uptick in the number of families in Connecticut. Oh, this is actually a report from the AP. The number of families in Connecticut who have sought a religious exemption from a host of childhood vaccinations, ultimately lowering the vaccination rate in as many as 100 schools at one point to under 95%. What a horror. I thought herd immunity was going to be achieved according to their fantasy fiction if you got 95% of the people vaccinated. No, they have 100%. It is a belief, even if it is not a specific religious one. But it's a problem, a growing problem, said the public health bureaucrat. Vaccine hesitancy is becoming a direct and serious threat to public health. It demands a proactive approach, and so they're going to demand that you get the vaccine. Again, if they can tell you what you cannot have in terms of medication, whether you're talking about medical marijuana or vitamin C, then they will tell you what you must have, because they have destroyed the whole idea that the abortionists have hidden behind for so long. My body, my choice. Well, it's not your body when you're ripping up a baby. But this is your body, and it should be your choice. More novel side effects from the vaccines, as New York Post points out, herpes infection. So it's not just a breakthrough of the actual vaccination, but it's now herpes. Scientists in Israel identified 6 cases in a new study of patients developing a skin rash known as shingles after getting the Pfizer vaccine. And a lot of these are long-term consequences from a lot of different vaccines that we've seen. Things like the chickenpox vaccine, giving people recurring cases of shingles. They said these 6 people represented 1.2% of those who got the Pfizer vaccine in this particular study. Think about that. That's more than 10 times the case fatality rate of COVID, even with their inflated numbers, more than 10 times getting shingles. The 6 patients all have mild cases of autoimmune inflammatory rheumatic disease and were very young, though the infection is generally more common in those over the age of 50. So you're getting people this thing who are at no risk at all from COVID, and you're exposing them to the risk of herpes, of autoimmune, rheumatoid arthritis, all these other things. For what reason? Well, you just got to do it, says Trump. Say the Democrats in Connecticut. Say both parties. Both parties. So they, again, pushed back on this. The health officials said, we got to tamp this down. We should not scare people. The overall message is to get vaccinated. It's important to be aware. Yes, therapeutics cannot work. Do not talk about simple, over-the-counter, natural therapeutics. Do not talk about your immune system and how to boost it. Instead, give people something that will destroy your immune system. You just got to get vaccinated. That's the only thing. People are testing positive for COVID-19 after getting the vaccine. 200 people in 24 different Washington counties tested positive. Of those 200, 5 people died. That'd be 2.5%. Versus something that even for the elderly has a 0.1% case fatality rate, and yet you got 2.5% of the people who died. Orders of magnitude more people dying from that. EU regulator finds possible blood link with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but says, hey, forget about it. Benefits outweigh the risk. They always do. It's just a coincidence anyway, right? The coincidence theorists say. So there's nothing really to worry about there. And, over the last week, we have seen full steam ahead. We've got to do this at warp speed. It doesn't matter that we've had about 5,800 people who've been fully vaccinated against COVID-19 have become infected anyway. Out of those people, and this is reported by CNN, it's not just the 200 and the 5 people who died, but out of those people, 74 died and 396 required hospitalization. That's 7% required hospitalization. And they said these 5,800 breakthrough cases that have been reported to the CDC, but it's still worth the risk, is it? If you are not at risk of, again, this is a relabeling of the actuarial table. So if you're under 55, you've got a 0.0% risk of dying with this. And yet you have a non-0% risk of dying with these experimental vaccines. And Norway has now stopped, as I pointed out last week, the AstraZeneca vaccine shots, as did Denmark. The amazing thing to me was that as Denmark stopped it, they said, well, we're going to share this with the underprivileged developing countries. Now, that's something you should pay attention to. Unbelievable what is happening. They said in Norway, calculations have been performed on Norwegian data where the risk of dying from COVID-19 disease among the different age groups is compared to the risk of dying from the severe but rare condition of severe blood clots observed after the AstraZeneca vaccination. But as I pointed out yesterday, we're seeing this happen. If you look at the VAERS database kept by the CDC, you see that this is happening to every single one of the vaccines because we don't have AstraZeneca being used here in the United States. It's Pfizer, it's Moderna, and it's Johnson & Johnson. And since Pfizer and Moderna have been done now for about 3 months, they have a huge number of these. It was just under 800 cases of this quote-unquote rare blood clot disease, which is becoming less and less rare. Denmark, again, is going to share that with the underprivileged countries. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Denmark is ready to or looking into the options of sharing this, even though we don't want it for our people. They said a possible link between the very rare cases of unusual blood clots, bleeding, and low blood platelet counts, there's a real risk of severe side effects. So maybe we can give away or even sell this to some of the developing nations, you know, because they're going to need to have some kind of a vaccine so they can get out of their country and travel. And then you have, this just about made me puke when I saw this, Trump's America First with vaccinations has worked. And this is from the Betsy McCaughey, who was the lieutenant governor in New York when Pataki was governor in the 1990s. Trump's America First with vaccines has worked. Does it really sound like that to you? A record number of deaths, more deaths than we had in the past 11 years combined. Record number of adverse effects, the strange blood clot situation, all these different vaccines, every single one of them. And he showered tens of billions of dollars on these people. She says it worked. He says it worked. These Republicans are not going to come to your rescue. They're proud of this. They're the ones also telling you, you got to get the shots. And they're going to be falling in line along with these Democrats who say, you know, the big problem that we have is all these people who are hesitant to get their vaccines. We just got to mandate it for them. And we got to make sure, because they're the ones who are keeping us locked down. You're going to become the virus. You will be the disease. For 20 years, I've been watching these people call humanity a virus that is killing Gaia. Yeah, we got Gaia, this pagan idea of Mother Earth, that collectively Mother Earth is some kind of a sentient being. And this is what these flakes in Hollywood, like Jennifer Lawrence, are telling you. Oh, look at this bad hurricane. Mother Earth is very angry with us. They really believe that stuff. They really believe that stuff. And they believe, and have said, that you are a virus. And that's why the people like John Sheldon Huber, science advisor to the Pope. Since when does the Pope need a science advisor? Anyway, but he was pushing depopulation. He was the one who wrote the Pope's climate encyclical. And all of these people have been pushing depopulation. Because, you know, if you got a virus, you need less of that virus. So you got the Republicans who are doing that as well. She says, listen to what she has to say. What Trump did was a remarkable achievement. Biden gets some credit for distributing the shots, but Trump is responsible for producing vaccines in record time and guaranteeing that America had first dibs on the supply. And we're seeing this from a lot of Republicans. I see this, you know, not just from InfoWars cheering Trump for what he did. At the same time, that's the interesting thing about InfoWars. They'll oppose the vaccine at the same time they cheer Trump for what he did. Like, how do you get past that kind of cognitive dissonance? Well, it's simply a lie. But then you have other people who jump into it 100%. You have Breitbart. You have Mark Levin. And you have typically all the people on big pharmaceutical-funded Fox News. And, of course, all the Democrats are doing it. The Democrats don't want to give Trump credit for this, and that's why you got people like Betsy McCaughey and Mark Levin, the rest of them, who are standing up for President Trump to give him credit for putting out this genetic code injection without any testing. That's all he did. All he did, that all he should get credit for, is ramming these things into your arm or letting other people do it by shutting down the testing. That's all he did. He didn't develop anything. He's not a scientist. He doesn't know anything about any of this stuff. And he doesn't care if it's tested. He let them run this thing through untested because he perceived it to be for his own political advantage. What a cynical Machiavellian calculation. And he let Fauci rule the country. Anyway, she said it's a remarkable achievement. Biden gets some credit. But Trump is responsible for producing vaccines in record time and guaranteeing that America had first dibs on the supply. Trump put America at the front of the line for these genetic code injections. He had the foresight to contract with not one or two, but six different vaccine companies. He contracted with them. He funded it. He showered them with money. And the federal government protects them from any liability. And he used the military to deliver it. Even while he was still president, he had Admiral Brett Giroir, who's running Operation Warp Speed, said, we're not just going to be delivering it. We're going to be putting it in people's arms as well. You're going to need us to do this mass distribution. Operation Warp Speed, says Betsy, paid to manufacture the vaccines before clinical trials proved they were safe and worked. Isn't that wonderful? Aren't you grateful that Trump did that? Boris Johnson, like Trump, showed the capitalist pluck. Well, I could say something about that, but we'll try to be polite. To partner with the drug companies early on and lock in the UK's future vaccine supply. And of course, so did Netanyahu. He willingly signed over his countrymen to be the lab rats for a two-year test, which is what they would have typically done. So we'll give you all the information about our people, put us at the front of the line. And it really became Israel first. They've done it more so than even America. Even though we paid for the vaccines to be developed, we paid off big pharmaceutical companies as Israel who got them first, thankfully. And thankfully, it didn't go to us. But our time is coming. And it's all about the digital passport. That one California county, Orange County, says is there for your peace of mind. The digital passport enables individuals to participate safely with a peace of mind in activities that involve interactions with other people, including travel, attractions, conference meetings, concerts, sports, school, and more. Why a peace of mind? Because they have driven you insane, obsessive compulsive disorder with their incessant fear-mongering. And, of course, all of those activities that they just mentioned will be denied to all of us who have not participated in this insanity and refuse to ever do so. I want to take a quick look at the trans war that is happening and where our culture is. And we have Netflix imploding stock-wise price after a huge subscriber miss and dismal guidance, says Zero Hedge. Recent earnings reports from Netflix have been mixed bag. The stock tumbled 3 quarters ago when the company reported earnings for the first full post-corona quarter and warned that growth is slowing. Now, why would growth slow for Netflix because of coronavirus? You have a captive population. People can't go to the movies. They can't go to the movie theaters. And they can't go to concerts, can't do much of anything, so they're staying home. You would think that they would be signing up for Netflix. You know why they didn't sign up for Netflix? Because right about that time, and they don't talk about this in the Zero Hedge article, but right about that time was the time that you had the cuties, pedophile, child sex trafficking film that came out. And that's why you had the #cancel Netflix. Now, that is really what's driving this, in my opinion. The filth, the depravity of Netflix, because that was not the first time they did something like that with cuties. They had another release in 2020, 365 days. They had one in 2018, Baby. And, you know, they describe these things as coming-of-age stories when they're sexualizing minors. Baby was, and a lot of these are produced in foreign countries. A Baby was produced in Italy. Cuties was produced in France. You know, a place where Hollywood pedophiles like Roman Polanski go to hang out safely. But Cuties, if you recall, those very, very young children doing kind of bar dances for money and that type of thing. But it was a coming-of-age story. 2018, Baby, that was a coming-of-age story about teen sex trafficking and prostitution. But, you know, it's just coming-of-age. Problem is they're not of age. They're minors. This is a company that has repeatedly pushed pedophilia. And I'm glad to see they're finally paying the price in terms of people turning off that filth. But it never ends. And you have people like Richard Dawkins now, who got his humanist award that was given to him 25 years ago for being a point man for the atheists. And now he's kind of reaping what he sowed. The cancel crowd has come after him over some trans tweets. His latest statement, they said, implies that the identities of transgender individuals are fraudulent, while also simultaneously attacking black identity as one that can be assumed when convenient. Well, again, they got it completely wrong. What he had to say, here's what he had to say that they are canceling him for. He tweeted out, he said, in 2015, Rachel DeLisle, a white chapter president of the NAACP, was vilified for identifying as black. Remember that? She braided her hair, colored her skin, and things like that. Told everybody that she was black, but she was white. Some men choose to identify as women, and some women choose to identify as men. You will be vilified if you deny that they literally are what they identify as. Discuss this, he said. Discuss this. So he just throws out an interesting juxtaposition that Rachel DeLisle was a, I guess we could call her trans black. I mean, she identified as black. She really loved being black. She wanted to be black. She loved black people so much she wanted to be a black person. I've called Beto O'Rourke. Actually, his name is Robert Francis O'Rourke. He's totally Irish, right? But he goes by Beto because he identifies with being Hispanic for political purposes. And so I called him a trans Hispanic. He's not Hispanic. He just merely identifies as one. And so you have Rachel DeLisle. You have Beto O'Rourke. And he says, well, you know, what do you do with this when men choose to identify as women and women choose to identify as men? And if you deny that they're literally what they claim to be, you're vilified. So if I deny that Rachel DeLisle is black, or I deny that Beto O'Rourke is Hispanic, or if I deny that a man who says he's a woman is really a woman, you'll be vilified. And so for that, they vilified him for asking that question. A couple days later, he groveled before them. He tried to appease them. Listen to what he said. I do not intend to disparage trans people. I see that my academic discuss question has been misconstrued, and I deplore this. But what was amazing about this was that they said that he was attacking black identity. So are they defending these people who canceled him, the American Humanists Association? Are they defending Rachel DeLisle? Are they saying that if you attacking black identity? So if somebody identifies as black, they are black? Is that what we're now supposed to believe from the humanists? The people who, as I say, you know, if you don't have, if you don't stand for something, if you don't have a standard, you'll fall for anything. And that's true of the humanists, I think. But let's go back to 2015. And this is what Dawkins said at the time about free speech to Bill Maher.
University campuses, the principle of free speech, when I think that the old university I went to, University of California at Berkeley, the free speech movement in the 1960s, what a betrayal we're seeing now.
Right.
With campuses all over the Western world, all over America and Britain, are denying people the right to come and speak at campuses. If you can't speak your mind on a university campus, where can you? I mean, that's what universities are about. It's about free speech. It's about being brought to it. It's about being exposed to ideas that you haven't met before, perhaps you're hostile to. If you only ever get exposed to ideas that you agree with, what kind of a university would that be?
Well, that'd be the kind of university that we have everywhere right now. What Dawkins doesn't understand is evolution. the atheist who's hung his career on evolution. Now, what we're seeing here is the evolution of Marxism. It is the natural progression, the survival of the fittest. That's what we're seeing here. And he thinks that universities are about free speech and inquiry. Where has he been? I mean, that wasn't even true in 2015 when he said it. And he was kind of bemoaning the fact that, you know, what's going on? I mean, these are supposed to be places where we can, you know, discuss, is what he said in his tweet. Well, he's learning the hard way, but he's also appeasing them. And that's the other thing he hasn't learned, is that you can't appease these people. Also back in 2015, Germaine Greer, another lefty, was hammered by the BBC. And I think you'll find this interesting. Notice how relentless the BBC individual is to come after this radical liberal feminist to get her to kowtow to the trans agenda back in 2015 when it was brand spanking new. And she just keeps turning it back. Now, I don't know where she is. She may have lost the plot like Dawkins has. That's the thing about Dawkins. I think the best response I've ever seen to Dawkins' evolution and his attacks on the existence of God was a parody that was done by a comedian. And he says, well, I've heard that there's a Dawkins, but I've never seen or met the Dawkins, so I don't believe that there is a Dawkins. That's basically where Dawkins is with God. But let's take a look at Germaine Greer in 2015 as she was being hectored by this BBC interviewer on trans issues.
Going to talk about women and power, the lessons of the 20th century, because I think there's a lot of triumphalist talk that masks the real historic situation. And apparently people have decided that because I don't think that post operative transgender men, i.e. M2F, transgender people are women, I'm not to be allowed to talk.
But surely if a man who feels that he actually would like gender reassignment to make him, her feel more comfortable in her body, then that's what should be done. They should be allowed to do that.
I'm not saying that people should not be allowed to go through that procedure. What I'm saying is it doesn't make them a woman. It happens to be an opinion. It's not a prohibition. Carry on if that's what you think it is you want to do. I've been accused of inciting violence against transsexual people. That's absolute nonsense.
But do you feel that the transgender community has too big a voice now? It seems to be you're saying that they're becoming what feminists were often called strident.
Yes, but they very seldom were strident, alas. I think that a great many women don't think that post-operative or even non-post-operative transsexual M2F transsexual people look like, sound like, or behave like women. But they daren't say so.
But just because they daren't say so doesn't mean that that person can't feel like that and feels more comfortable with themselves.
Yeah, but so what? That's not my issue. I don't even talk about it. Not everybody does feel comfortable, by the way, post-operatively. There's been a couple of cases I found very interesting where the actual acceptor of the procedure has felt that it's been a disaster.
But for those who do not feel it's been a disaster and feel more comfortable, then do you understand how they might feel that you have been hurtful towards them?
People are hurtful to me all the time. Try being an old woman. I mean, for goodness sake, people get hurt all the time. I'm not about to walk on eggshells.
Yeah, try being an old woman or try being an old white man, Christian. I mean, I'm not going to walk on eggshells either. We'll fix that in post because the first part of that, it was kind of weird the way the BBC recorded that interview. They recorded the interviewer on one channel, and then they put her on the other channel, and something happened, the first bit of question. But you saw the hectoring going back and forth. But what about these people? Don't you care about their freedom? She says, it's not my issue. And, you know, a lot of them are not really happy after they have their surgery, and we've talked a great deal about that in the last few years. You have some people who are very upset about the abuse that they suffered. The transgender surgery doesn't really help any. This is a mental issue. And as I've said many times, if you want to, if you imagine that you're Napoleon, that's fine. I don't want to do anything to you as long as you're not harming any people. You don't need to be locked up. I mean, if you're harming kids because you think you're Napoleon or because you think you're a transgender individual, then that's a different issue. But if you're not harming anybody, you know, go have your parties, dress up like Napoleon. Just don't expect me to follow your orders, okay? I'm not marching to your orders. We have Asa Hutchinson, the governor, Republican governor of Arkansas, continued this last Sunday to virtue signal on Meet the Press, NBC's Meet the Press, about standing for the rights of transgender children. And what I thought was truly amazing about this, besides the fact that he is so out of touch with his Republican base and the Republican legislature, who then overrode him, that this guy doesn't get the difference between adults and children doing this. It's bad enough when it's an adult. And as I've pointed out before, a guy who has been in this field for decades, a psychologist who is respected by the transgender, we call it the industry, the movement, the mob, whatever. And he's very sympathetic to that. As a matter of fact, as a Canadian, he believed that the surgery ought to be paid for. But he said only for people who are over the age of 21 and who have lived under their assumed identity for 2 years or more. And so for that, he was vilified. He was purged. So this was Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press talking to him. It said this was the third bill targeting transgender youth in some form and the issue in some form that passed your Arkansas legislature. Did you veto this third bill because of the specifics of the bill or how much of it was enough already with these bills that seemed to be in search of a problem that didn't exist? Let me tell you, the problem that didn't exist. The problem that didn't exist was all this transgender stuff in the first place. And the reason that he reversed himself on this particular bill to defend children from this was because of pressure from the Walmart family that never earned a cent, that inherited the wealth from Sam Walton, but who throw that money around and have politicians like Asa Hutchinson dancing on the end of their strings. Hutchinson said, well, we had three bills. Each bill had to stand on its own, and I signed the two that I thought made sense. One of them was to defend girls and sports, trying to protect women's sports. So he signed that. He said, if you pretend that you're biologically, you know, you're biological male and you pretend to be a woman, you're not going to be able to participate in women's sports. The other one was supporting medical conscience, that doctors can claim a conscience reason if they want to deny a particular procedure, but they still have to do emergency care. So he said, so we, you know, because you can see the handwriting is on the wall with this Democrat equality bill, that people will be compelled to do things that they feel is wrong, and maybe not even in the interest of the patient, but things that they don't want to be involved with. So he signed those two bills. But he goes, the third one was not well done, and it was about youth, and it interfered with the government getting into the lives of transgender youth and their parents, and the decisions that doctors want to make. The third bill that he vetoed at the behest of the Walmart family, the Walton family, that third bill was to say that you're not going to do irreversible chemical or surgical damage to minor children. They don't have the maturity to do that. That's what he vetoed. The worst situation of all three of these situations we've talked about, that's far worse than somebody beating a biological girl in a race or wrestling or something like that. That is far more insidious than that. And that's what he refused to sign. Fortunately, they overrode his vehicle, his veto. Todd said, why do you think there's so much focus only a month after some of the members of the legislature among issues you tell me, is this really bubbling up in Arkansas schools? Hutchinson said, well, it's not. But the fear is about the future, and the fear is also that we're losing our culture. The case I make, though, It's just because you want to keep things as they have been, perhaps you don't need to use the government. You don't need to use a state to accomplish your purpose in every instance. There's church, there's community, there's all these other things. And so I would ask Asa Hutchinson and the people like him who support this, you think pedophilia is a crime. Because what's underlying all of this in terms of minor children is to say that they have the maturity and the ability to determine that they are a different gender than they are biologically. Even prepubescent children can make that determination. And that they can be altered lifetime. And if they can make that kind of decision, they can make the decision to have consensual sex. That's where this is all headed. And not only that, but if Asa Hutchinson doesn't think they ought to protect children from these surgical and chemical procedures, then why does he have the state police issuing seatbelt tickets? Why does he have the state police giving tickets to parents who don't have their kids in a child seat? No. They'll continue to do that. But if the parents decide that they would like to manipulate their children's genitals and their psychology, or if the schools want to do it, schools can do that and shut the parents out. Or one parent can do it and shut the other parent out. And we should allow them to experiment and mutilate children. The Hill comes out at the same time. Alarm is growing over the impact of states that are banning trans youth treatment. No, this is not trans youth treatment. This is child mutilation. This is getting sexual consent from babies. When states have floated anti-trans bills, we've seen calls to the Trans Lifeline triple, said one of the people they contacted. They said, such as the North Carolina so-called bathroom bill. Yeah, because if these people can't get in the bathroom, they're going to commit suicide. If they can't use the woman's bathroom, they're going to commit suicide. Let me tell you, you've got bigger issues if that's going to drive you to suicide. And you're not going to be able to act out your mental illness with women and children. It's just that simple. We're not going to allow it. We're not going to be shamed about this at all. We're going to tackle this. We don't really care if we get canceled, do we? Do you care if you get canceled off of social media for talking about things like this? Are you going to grovel like Richard Dawkins? The extreme mental health harm inflicted on trans people of all ages, let me tell you, that's what these people are doing in the schools. That's what these psychologists are doing. It's an industry. And they're confusing these kids before they've experienced puberty. And they don't really understand what's going on. That's the whole point. It's children. It's children. A crisis in suicide prevention organization is talking about this. Well, you want to talk about suicide? Talk about how many of these people commit suicide who have had all of the surgery. Because as Jermaine Greer pointed out 6 years ago, a lot of people were not happy with that. It made the situation a lot worse for them because now they've got physiological issues along with their psychological issues, along with their spiritual issues. These anti-trans bills, says The Hill, are creating barriers to interrupt the opportunity for physicians and teachers to make the best recommendations for the child. That's exactly what we should be doing, interrupting them, making those decisions for children. That's exactly what we should be doing. Andrew Sullivan, who is a Republican homosexual, so he writes on conservative economic issues, but he is supportive of this to some degree, but even he says we need to have a truce proposal in the trans wars. He says it has seized the attention of some of the most extreme elements among radical feminists who are going to war with the transgenders because they understand that because they have vilified men so much that most of this is happening, men wanting to be women because they're vilified for being men. This is really happening with us, just as you see Rachel DeLisle wanting to be black because she's been vilified for being white, feeling guilty about that. So, you know, we'll become the other thing. I don't even want to fight it. And he says, worse, it has now excited the Christian right. who see recognition of trans rights as an effort to destroy the sexual binary. Oh, yeah. Are we imagining that? Or is that really happening? That is exactly what is happening. That's why I say the answer to LGBT is BOB. Biological, objective, and binary. We could also add another B, biblical. Big global stories, he said, for example, a high court case in Britain that found that minors under 16 are not developmentally capable of making the decision to take puberty blockers are routinely ignored. He said there's a video from the Washington Post doesn't even gesture at fairness, no presentation of counter-argument, instant attribution of bigotry for anybody who is deemed to be in disagreement. So he says, of course I support them and I empathize with them because I'm gay. But he says, I trust biology on the core binary sexual reproductive strategy of our species. And I do not believe that a trans woman or a trans man is in every way indistinguishable from a woman or a man. If there was no difference, you wouldn't be calling them a trans woman or a trans man. It's just that simple. Biological sex is socially constructed. He says, I don't believe that idea. Or that it is a function of white supremacy, which is the fiction that they're showing. So he comes down on the side of saying we have to distinguish between adults and children. So he does get it right. And on that point, you would think that we could all agree. But see, he doesn't understand the true agenda. The true agenda is an agenda of pedophilia. Again, if a child can make the decision of what gender they are, even before puberty, and if they can decide that they're not their biological gender, they can consent to sex. And this is why you see the same people pushing pedophilia that are pushing this transgender way. He says, in either way, in which trans ideology doesn't only seek to protect trans kids, but to abolish the idea of biological sex altogether, to teach kids that they have a choice over whether to be a boy or a girl, that should be kept out of the classroom. I agree with him on that. It takes the expertise, takes the experience of less than 1% of humanity, and it tries to make it explain the 99% of their peers. It's nuts. It will confuse children. And he's exactly right. Exactly right. This is why the LGBT is having a civil war. It's not just the lesbians who are fighting with the transgenders. It's also the gay people are fighting with them because they always believed that they were trying to sell the idea that being gay was not a mental construct but a biological construct. So they've driven a stake in the ground there. And then along come the transgenders who say, well, we think that it's simply in your mind. And that's as threatening to the G's as it is to the L's, who have staked out a position for women, and that's being attacked. So it's kind of interesting to see that happening. All right, we're a little bit over time here. We're going to tell you again where you can find us if you would like to send articles and comments. I didn't have time. I got several comments I wanted to read today, and I even had somebody say, hey, I enjoy hearing the letters. I'm sorry I didn't get to the letters today. I'll get to them tomorrow. We'll spend even more time on it. I do read your letters. I got a great card. This is nice with the contribution. You've got a powerful voice. That was very nice of them. And a thank you card. And so I do get a lot of things like that. And by the way, if you want to send something to us, contributions or cards or letters or anything like that, you can send the P.O. box is there at thedavidknightshow.com. I had another person ask us about Bitcoin. And yes, we do take Bitcoin. I'm not opposed in principle to Bitcoin. I look at all these different things. Bitcoin has got risks. It's manipulated. So is the gold market to some degree, a silver market. But nothing is more manipulated than the fiat currency. So I'm not ruling out any of those things. And so all those links of how you can support us via PayPal, davidknightshow@protonmail.com. You can send contributions there, or you can, there's a direct link to PayPal at thedavidknightshow.com. As well as how you can share the show and the information that we have here. You'll find all of that at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.